Good afternoon, everyone. Mayor Bradley is not with us today, so I'll be chairing this meeting this morning. Welcome you to the Winter Park City Commission meeting of April 28th. Starting us off today is Minister John McDonald from the Flowers Temple Church of God in Christ. And once he has finished with his blessing, if you'd all remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance, we'd appreciate it. Commissioner McDonald.
Father God, we thank you, God, for before we ask you for anything, God, we thank you for everything. For in your word you say, in all things, give thanks. So God, we thank you for life, we thank you for health, and we thank you for strength. Now we're asking you, God, to sit in this, God, to govern this meeting, God, to give us wisdom, God. Let your guidance be a lamp unto our feet and a light unto our path. God, we ask that you bless the commissioner and his staff, the mayor and their staff, God. And every citizen that's represented here today, God, let peace and unity abide in this place, God. We will forever give you the glory, and we'll give you all the praise. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you for that blessing, and thank you for what you do for our community. We appreciate it. We have the agenda for a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Any changes?
Second.
Great. All in favor?
Aye.
The mayor's report. We have a briefing. I haven't seen Scott.
He is running late. He got stuck in traffic.
Okay, great. That's quite all right. That's quite all right. We'll move on to, we're going to get John Michael Thomas. John Michael is a Eagle Scout. He's a resident of Winter Park. He's a Life Scout with Troop 62. He attended St. Margaret Mary School and is a freshman currently at Bishop Moore, where he's enrolled in honors courses. Born in Florida Hospital. Some of his family's here to join him. I met his mother, Valerie, before. John Michael's going to share with us what he's looking to do as for his Eagle Scout project. So, John Michael, please step up to the podium. And
well, first off, I just wanted to start off by thanking all of you guys for having me here today. And as you said, my name is John Michael Thomas. I am a Life Scout. And my Eagle Scout advisor is Mr. Fichette, and I am 15 years old. I'm a resident here in Winter Park, and I graduated St. Margaret Mary Catholic School and currently attend Bishop Moore as a freshman. Well, my project, my Eagle Scout project, it was inspired by my dear friend and classmate, Elizabeth Buckley, who passed away from an inoperable brain tumor on December 31st, 2012. And she loved playing in Central Park as well as Peacock, the Winter Park symbol. And she was very fond of Central Park, and she just loved it. Well, and the benefits of my service project? Well, the Peacock Fountain, it would provide our community and visitors with an artwork to enjoy for years to come, as well as visual enjoyment, and it would beautify Central Park's Rose Garden. It would also establish a meditation area for the community in honor of a young girl who impacted our community by her generosity and love for the arts. Elizabeth's art was actually displayed at the ice skating rink last year, which was a drawing of a peacock wearing a Santa hat. And the location and description of the park, as you all know, it is the Central Park Rose Garden. And our plan, which was approved, is to put it in the middle of the garden, which would provide it with a beautiful centerpiece. And we would also do irrigation considerations since it is a fountain, as well as a variety of roses or small hedges to be bordering the fountain, which would, of course, require a plan to be approved by the Parks Committee. This is a picture, and the peacock fountain is a bronze peacock, which is very similar to the symbol of Winter Park. And it would also have an inscription stating that it was inspired by Elizabeth. Here are some more pictures. And this is the one that we would be getting. And here are the installation suggestions from the foundry. And the Peacock Fountain, it is by Lloyd LeBlanc and is a limited edition. It is 7 feet tall. It is, our fundraising goal is around $50,000, since the fountain is about $46,000, which would include, the $50,000 would include all costs, including the water pump, shipping, and installation labor and miscellaneous. The fountain also requires a $12,000 deposit, and the location of this fountain is in England. And I divided up my project into three phases. This is the first phase, and this is part A. So as I said, the total fundraising goal is $50,000. And first, we compose a donation form showing different levels of participation, which would have a target donor list, which would consist of friends, family, neighbors, and whoever was willing to support and donate. We would break down the list into high, medium, and low net worth donors, and we would delegate teams to approach and solicit potential donors, as well as solicit donors through the City of Winter Park Network. My part B and C of my first phase would execute my launch strategy, which is starting in May. And I would compose social media, such as emails and letters, to formally announce my Eagle Project, as well as schedule social events for my Eagle Project for presentation and appeal, which would also have hors d'oeuvres and drinks, such as wine and cheese at people's houses, which is to be determined. And at those, I would present my Eagle PowerPoint. I would appeal for donations, such as contacting my former school, St. Margaret Mary, as well as Bishop Moore, for things such as dress down days, bake sales, car washes, etc., stuff like that. And I would also send out letters to students and parents as to well, and then I would put that all into a local bank deposit to hold my donations. My second phase would be to secure the Peacock Fountain, which would review and finalize my proposal to the foundry, as well as send a deposit to the foundry in the UK. Then we would schedule a shipping date, arrange transportation and logistics from the airport to the park, and then submit the final payment. Then my third and final phase would be to install the Peacock Fountain and roses. The target date is around October. To install the fountain, we would schedule an install prep team with the City of Winter Park, since they have agreed to prepare and install the fountain. Then we would schedule an install date, a schedule a date for landscaping and planting of the rose bushes which would be determined after discussed with the city. Then I would schedule a date for a dedication ceremony, and then submit my Eagle Project after finalizing. These are just a few pictures of my friend.
Is that what you've got?
Yes, sir.
Great. Would you mind if we ask you a few questions?
Yes, sir.
Wonderful. I just have a quick question for staff. Randy, can you tell me from a process standpoint how to move forward with this? I want to make sure we're handling it the right way.
Our Parks Department will be working with them to make sure everything happens, in accordance with the plan. Make sure that the structure would be what we needed to be, and everything. So, they've done this. We've done this type of thing with others in the past. So, it's fairly routine the way they work with them.
So, you don't need necessarily an approval from us. We would just ask for it to move forward to Parks and Rec to.
Right, and he's already presented to Parks and Rec and got their approval. So,
okay. Any questions?
Just appreciation. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Wonderful friend and an awesome gift for the city. We have another young man in town, Andrew Weinstock, mm-hmm. that you might well want to hook up with. He does collection of candy for all soldiers overseas, and maybe together he can help you, market and help you know people to contact.
Because okay.
He's done this before you, and thank you very
well,
much.
Thank you.
It's wonderful.
Sounds great. Sir? I like the choice of high school. My daughter graduated from there last year, so
she
will survive, don't worry. Even through the honors courses.
Thank you.
Great.
Just thank you. It's great to have young people in front of us doing wonderful things. It makes you realize that the world will go on.
Thank you.
It's a nice tribute, John Michael. Thank you so much. And we will staff will be getting back in touch and get you through the Parks and Rec situation. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Presenting to the Randy, I'm going to turn this over to you. We have our recognition of our core, you couldn't have made this easier for me? Core value coin recipients.
Say it fast.
Yes. Tough enough. So, Randy, please take it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. As you recall, we started this process a quarter ago, and this is our second quarter. So, I'm pleased to be in front of you again, this time to present to you a whole new slate of employees who've earned one of our core value coins over this past quarter. We had developed seven core values that are here to remind the employees every day how to go about focusing on doing our jobs the right way. Those core values are communication, customer service, diversification and diversity and inclusion, ethics and compliance, professionalism, safety, and teamwork. Today in our audience, we have many of these employees that have received a core value coin for something extraordinary they did in their everyday job over this past quarter. These employees have truly focused on quality by demonstrating excellence in their commitment to making one or more of our core values come to life. And I'd like to recognize them for their commitment to excellence. I have a couple of stories I'll share with you, and then we'll introduce the overall group. The first is a behind-the-scenes story about professionalism in our City of Winter Park train station. Oftentimes, we see a building and appreciate the architecture, the landscape, or the decor. What we don't realize is that all the work that went into the building of that structure before it was built, and all the time and effort that was spent before it actually opened. We are familiar with our old Winter Park train station, not much to boast about. And many of us were at the grand opening of our new train station on March 3rd. Definitely something to be proud of. As we gathered to cut the ribbon to this beautiful building, there was one person that did not get to hold the scissors up there but was in the background behind the scenes. And that person was our very own Lena Peterson, project manager of the train station construction. We all know what it is like to get a construction project done in our own house. You can imagine multiplying that by tenfold or a hundredfold to pull off a project like this. It's not only coordinating with the front Department of Transportation, the contractors, the Amtrak people, and even the SunRail people, and trying to make that happen and not get in each other's way. It was quite an accomplishment. With so many people involved, Lena worked side by side with the general contractor and the project to keep it on schedule and under budget. And Lena was also responsible for managing the paperwork and the grant money associated with the project by supplying appropriate information to meet all the federal criteria to properly use the funds. And if you've ever worked on federal grants, I know Commissioner Cooper, you have. There's a lot of I's to dot and T's to cross to make sure you get all of your funding. And she did all that with perfection. And all the details from laying the first brick and placing the final lock, Lena was right there making sure it all happened. And for all this behind the scenes work, we presented Lena with a professionalism coin to recognize her today. I think I saw Lena here. Let's stand and we'll recognize her first. The second story that also represented the core value of professionalism is about a group of gentlemen, Tony Furbush, Mark Manu, Andrew Miller, and Jim Ralphson, who went above and beyond for a resident that resulted in hundreds of dollars of future savings for him. The resident was Mr. Tom Cook. He explained he was experiencing a huge, inexplicable loss of water. His meter was spinning at a rate of almost 400 gallons an hour with all the faucets off. He and his wife had walked all around the property trying to find the leak. They brought in a plumber, did the same thing, couldn't find the leak, and a contractor that lived nearby, they all couldn't find anything. So on Monday morning before 9 a.m., two city trucks and four crewmen led by Jim arrived at the house prepared to diagnose and fix the problem. The property was walked and still nothing was found. They all remained perplexed and puzzled. Then one of the crewmen, Tony, went back over the same ground that at least six people had already examined and found the problem. It was a leak about 2 feet underground because of a massive tree root that had expanded and busted the pipe. Crew came together, went to work, and in about 20 minutes, they bypassed the break and the problem was solved. Because of their professionalism, Mr. Cook was extremely impressed with the attention, the helpful can-do attitude, the team spirit and professionalism skills of the whole crew. Mr. Cook said, not only did they know their job, but they seemed to enjoy doing it. Because of their exemplary work, they reflected positively on the utilities department and the city as a whole. They have been recognized with the professionalism coin for their excellent service and technical expertise. And I'd like to ask them to stand. I believe I saw them here. These are just two of the stories of the of many exceptional employees that we have and the many things that happened over the last quarter. I want to just call out the names of those that received coins over the last quarter and ask them to stand if they're here. Customer service, we had Daryl Clayman, Daniel Mayer, George Richardson, and Linda Struby. Lena Struby, sorry about that. ethics and compliance, we had David Lanfear. Professionalism, Cindy Bonham, Anthony Furbush, Mark Manu, Andrew Miller, Lena Peterson, and Jim Routson. Teamwork, Teresa Broman, Luke Bryan, Barry Carson, Karen Cockerham, Caitlin Gonzalez, Steve Mathis, Brian Smith, and Kevin Tinch. And safety, Rod Blackstone, Mike Ruby, and Gil Tinch. Congratulations to all of you and for making every day exceptional in Winter Park. And if you could all come forward, I believe we're going to try to get a picture with the commission behind us. So.
Dave, can I have Dave Zuzzi come up to the podium, too? There's a presentation of the Outstanding Class C Water Treatment Plant Award for the Magnolia Water Treatment Plant. Dave Zuzzi is our Water and Waste Utilities Director, and he's going to come to the podium. I think I'm supposed to join him down there. Let's see what we're going to do.
Roll. I'm just going to introduce this real quickly. I'm always, I think, more proud of an award that is based on operations and performance. And that's exactly what this award is. I'm going to let Jason Perillo introduce the award and explain what it was for.
Thank you, David. Commissioners, let's honor some more City of Winter Park staff, primarily your utility. My name is Jason Perillo. I'm the immediate past chair of the Florida section of the American Water Works Association. We represent Florida's water professionals and over 2,200 members, including about 80% of the utilities that provide potable water to the state of Florida and its citizens. And the city of Winter Park received an award that is no small feat. These people work day in and day out behind the scenes, tirelessly 24/7, to make sure that when you turn on the faucet, you have clean, reliable, healthy, fresh tap water at your disposal. I think everybody here can attest to that, that it's always that way, and it's because of the people and the fine folks at the city of Winter Park that make that happen. So it's my privilege to be able to present to David Zusi and the city of Winter Park the Outstanding Class C Water Treatment Plant Award for the Magnolia Water Treatment Plant to the city of Winter Park. Congratulations.
I also wanted to, we have Orange County Tax Collector Scott Randolph. I did see him come in. Scott, it's a great opportunity for us to hear from our tax collector. Scott spent many years in the House in Tallahassee. We're happy to have you here with Orange County, and sure love to listen to what you have to say. And if you wouldn't mind, would you be available to take a couple questions from the commission if we have any afterwards?
Yes, thank definitely. You. Thank you so much, and I apologize for being late. I would like to say it was something useful, but it was 3 hours at the Apple store trying to get my phone to work. So it was a Monday morning for myself, yes. And then I was stuck on I-4 traffic. So, I really appreciate, I just wanted to come by very quickly and really just sort of more make the rounds to all the taxing authorities and try to make ourselves more available and create a better relationship with the tax collector's office among our taxing authorities. I just wanted to sort of update you on a couple of things. One of them that you may have read in the paper about us switching to the single simultaneous bidder rule for the upcoming tax certificate sale for 2014. That is a switch that a few tax collectors are doing this year in response to really sort of perception that the tax certificate process has now been really sort of overtaken by hedge funds and sort of pushed out the small and the local investors that used to exist in the market. And so we decided to follow the lead of a couple of the other larger counties that have already switched over. And so we expect that to occur this year. I expect it to go smoothly. There should be no real issue with that. I do hope that some of our local investors will take advantage of that. What had happened was, as you recall, before the age of the Internet, it used to be that these tax certificates would actually be sold on in a room like this at the end of May, and people would raise their hands, and that's how tax certificates were sold when it went on the Internet and everything went online. What occurred was then hedge funds would actually create all these different corporate entities just to bid on tax certificates. If you actually go to the IRS website to apply for an EIN, employer identification number now, you'll actually see a disclaimer that says you cannot apply for an EIN to do tax certificates. That is solely because of that problem that was created. We had nearly, three and a half million bids last year, which was really actually about 30 companies. And it really just sort of, and because everything drove down as in a low interest rate environment that we're in now, everything basically came in at the statutory minimum, and then it was a lottery to get that tax certificate. And so, of course, if you're sitting there with half a million different EINs to bid, you statistically basically push out the little guy. So we've changed that in hopes that to bring back the little guy, the little investor, the local investors, local banks one more time. And so that should be coming. Again, we'll have the tax certificate sale at the end of May. I've also been working with the county, and one of the other issues that I came across when I came into office was that the issue of a real backlog in what's called the county-held tax certificates. So if somebody does a bid on a tax certificate, it's actually struck to the county. And so it sits out there. After 2 years, the statute says that on any piece of property that's assessed at more than $5,000, the county shall apply for the tax deed in order to try to get it to auction, to try to get those taxes paid, to put that property back into productive value. That had not been occurring. In fact, it had not occurred in the last decade. So we're sitting on a real backlog. The county's now done the 2006. We're getting ready to do a few of those. But then what we noticed on that list was the second issue within that list was that several taxing authorities had, with their non-ad valorem assessments, we ended up actually with about 45 to 50 churches that are otherwise exempt from ad valorem property taxes that were at risk of a tax deed sale because of a non-ad valorem assessment, stormwater, street lights, a sidewalk assessment, something that I don't think any of them were ever accustomed to paying. They just presumed they were exempt. But because that taxing authority put that as a non-ad valorem assessment instead of a direct billing, it became subject to the tax deed sale. So I'm happy to report that we did get literally every single church off that list for 2006. We're continuing to work with them to make sure that that gets off the rest of the tax rolls as well. It's something I've actually tried to start cautioning taxing authorities when they're thinking about non-ad valorem versus a direct billing. And I will say, you know, we met with Mr. Knight and we talked about that direct billing versus non-ad valorem. And I'm happy, obviously, I think in Winter Park, City of Winter Park, you do mostly direct billing. In fact, I noticed there was only one county-held tax certificate inside the City of Winter Park, and it was just a small piece of parcel actually valued at less than $5,000. So you all are doing a great job here. I think it also pretends that you have a great tax base. There's so little of outstanding tax certificates in the City of Winter Park, and I think you're taking the right approach to doing direct billing versus non-ad valorem on a lot of these pieces of property. So that bodes very well. Now, as compared to the City of Ocoee, that does a lot of non-ad valorem assessments, they've got like $28,000 of county-held tax certificates in that small municipality. That we're going to have to figure something out, and they may never get paid because of the properties assessed at less than $5,000. These aren't properties that the county is ever going to apply for tax deed on, because if nobody bids at the tax deed, then it becomes a county-held piece of property. The county actually gets title to it. So obviously the county doesn't necessarily want to go forward with that. So it really just sort of sits out there and muddies up the tax roll is what it does. We're very much focused on those old county-held tax certificates overall. Several hundred thousand dollars to our public school system that we need to clean up, and we need to either get collected or get that property back in a productive value for everyone. So the only other thing I wanted to talk about very quickly is, as you may be aware, the state has pushed down all DHSMV functions down to the local tax collectors. A wonderful unfunded mandate from the state of Florida. Actually, the state of Florida saved about $16 million a year pushing down driver's license to local tax collectors. We have now officially taken that over, and I know my predecessor, right when I was coming in office, my predecessor had decided to close down the Lee Road location, which was the only location in Orange County and Winter Park. And so just to report, we have two new locations coming that I think will be able to serve the City of Winter Park very well. They won't actually be inside the city limits, but I'm trying to get some locations back close to the City of Winter Park. One will be a new location at Dean and University, which will be our, when that opens at the end of July, will be our largest facility that we have in Orange County. It will actually be about 11,000 square feet and will be full service. And then as you may be aware as well, as I've been pushing the county, Orange County, to get us out of the SunTrust building for our administrative offices, they've agreed to purchase an entire building for us at McGuire Boulevard there at Fashion Square Mall. Part of that will be that we'll be opening up a tag agency. Unfortunately, to accommodate the needs of the property appraiser getting out of the SunTrust building as well. He got the building that had fewer leaseholdovers, so my building has more leaseholdovers. We won't be opening up that tag office probably for about 2 years, but I am hopeful that that Dean and University is able to provide some good service to the City of Winter Park residents. If you've heard of any complaining on closing of Lee Road, it was before me. But when it has been, and it has been a concern of mine. I look at that map and I go, wow, there's a hole in my map there. And so when we were choosing a new location on the east side, I did make it a priority to try to push that a little bit closer in to the east side of Winter Park there to be able to serve Winter Park better. So that's why I just wanted to come and again say hello and open up that relationship between the taxing authorities and the tax collector. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
I just at some point would like to know where all the locations are.
Oh, sure. Well, you can go to our website. But we do have about 8 offices. Some of the new things we're doing there is obviously we've expanded the appointment system. Okay. For everyone, so you can make an appointment for any type of system. In a couple of months, I'm hoping to open up what's called the Tag Express so that you can actually do the transaction online and just come and pick up the tag, your tag renewal, in the office without having to wait as well. So we're trying to invest in that technology as we deal with this, again, the unfunded mandate of the driver's license.
You heard about those when you were in Tallahassee.
Oh, yes.
Now you get to be on the other end of it.
That's exactly right. You know what's ironic? I don't think the association, I'm still like puzzled to this day why the association didn't push for a fee increase for the local tax collectors, but it did not occur. So, but the good news is, and so we're wrapping down what's called the Real ID Act. So by the end of 2016, everybody should be Real ID compliant, except obviously for new driver's license. So everyone, that has been sort of the big thing that's just caused this massive backlog, is literally everyone with a driver's license has to come in, and they have to do the birth certificate, the Social Security card, all that additional ID work. And so it's created a longer transaction period. And again, every single person has had to come in the office to renew. So that should be wrapping down by about 2016. And so a couple more years.
Scott, you mentioned that the appointment system is fantastic. I used it a couple of weeks ago to schedule an appointment this Wednesday. I had to go back and change my appointment today for Wednesday. And it was very simple.
Good.
It's a great process. And it's a lot easier walking into DMV knowing you have a scheduled appointment. It's a great system.
Good. I really appreciate that. We worked hard on that website. When I came into office, that website, according to Google Analytics, had about a 45% bounce rate, which means people sort of came and they couldn't find what they were looking for, and so they left, and now our bounce rate's below 2%. So we're very excited about that.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. And my office is always open. If you have any questions, feel free to give me a call.
Thank you for your service. Randy, City Manager's Report.
Thank you. Just a couple of items. I want to remind everybody we have the public meeting tomorrow at the community center, right?
Nope.
Civic Center, sorry. 5:00?
Yes.
And they're going to be doing separate presentations, I believe, at like 5:15.
That is the Lee Road Extension.
Lee Road Extension, correct. So I think it runs until about 7 o'clock, but you have an opportunity to ask people in the room questions as well as listen to the exact same presentation 3 different times, so some people won't be able to get there right away at 5.
Can you tell us what groups we'll have there represented?
Well, it's going to be the developers' consultants as well as the city consultant will be there. City Public Works people will be there. I believe DOT is going to be there in not as official capacity. They're not going to have a booth, I don't think, but they're going to be there to hear the comments that are made. Everybody will be given an opportunity to make comments in writing that will be then delivered to the City Commission, so you'll get the benefit of those comments.
Okay.
We got the benefit of some right here.
Don't have to wait.
And Randy, will DOT be presenting at all, or can we ask them
They are not presenting at this, no.
Okay.
So, any other questions on that before I move on? All right.
Just clarify for the listeners. So then the process is after that, it comes back to us the following. Then we have a work session.
Right. We have a work session scheduled for May the 5th
right.
at 4:00, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's a week from today.
Right, week from today.
And then
for you to hear from the consultants,
right, okay,
and then you'll decide at that time whether you want it to come back to you on May 12th or when you want it to come,
okay,
back to you for actual further discussion.
Okay.
I know some of you have been getting some emails about the parking at the SunRail. I just wanted to reiterate to everybody that, you know, a lot of discussion went on back when this project was originally planned, and the decision was made that our station would be a kiss and ride station. There were a lot of factors that went into that, but primarily it was because we there was a defined shortage of parking already downtown, and the concern was that if we allowed all-day parking to be taken up by commuters that would, they were parking here and getting on the train, going somewhere else, that when our employees of downtown and visitors came to downtown, the parking would already be gone before the shops even opened up. So that was the primary reason this was decided to be a kiss-and-ride station instead of a park-and-ride station. So the closest park-and-ride station that you can park for free is Maitland. You can also go to the Florida South. They have a parking garage you can pay it to be in and park there and ride, but ours is a kiss and ride station. We've been working with the employees downtown to issue decals or hangers for them to be able to park all day in designated areas, but you have to have one of those passes. Because I know you've been getting questions about that.
Well, this morning someone told me that new signs were in all of the parking garages. Have we? Can you tell us what's gone up in the parking garages?
Yeah, these are the areas where previously was all-day parking. We now have signs. I think most of them say four-hour parking with if you don't have the tag. You know, so basically visitors still can park in those garages for up to four hours, and employees with one of those tags can park in there for 8 hours. And it's technically effective Thursday, I guess, with the opening of SunRail.
I don't think that's a solution to our overall parking crisis, and I think we are going to continue to work on it some more.
We are.
I understand it's a little bit of a Band-Aid for now.
It is, and, you know, we continue to look for, you know, parking options to make up that shortage of parking, because first thing you got to do is make up the shortage of parking before you then can start providing extra parking for SunRail riders.
Sure.
And as we observe this first year of operation or so, we'll see as people commuting to Winter Park help some of our parking situation. Maybe that creates some additional parking.
Awesome.
So, you know, there's going to be some learn on the go and adjust on the fly as we do this. We'll be, you know, if things don't work, we'll have to make other decisions.
Commissioner Cooper?
Randy, I apologize that I've forgotten where we went with this, but I remember that during the initial discussions at Commuter Rail, we talked about the possibility of a local circulator bus, and it seems like that was about $150,000 a year or operating cost or something.
That's correct.
Are we doing anything like that?
We do not have anything in place come May 1. Some of the major employers are going to be running their own van pools, and we've been working with them and talking with them about if that's the ultimate solution, or do we need to create a circulator that's maybe shared amongst the major employers. The challenge that we found in looking at the bus routes associated with the station, you know, the Lynx buses, they have generated more buses coming to the station, but this is a big timing issue. Sometimes they'll arrive 5 minutes before the train, which is great if you're arriving on the bus to go somewhere on commuter rail. But if you're on that commuter rail train that shows up, the bus has already left 5 minutes before, so now you're waiting either 30 minutes or an hour for the next bus. So there's a lot of learning that we'll all do through this process to get a better well-oiled machine somewhere in the future. I'm sure there'll be some bumps in the road.
I'm really encouraged about the commercial neighbors helping with that, because mm-hmm. I think people are going to be far more comfortable getting on a bus that their employer provides,
right,
than people who aren't used to using links, trying to learn that process. That's a very positive thing.
Right.
Our partners.
Can you also update us on the lot behind us here, back here, that we're working
the old
on?
DPW
lot?
Yeah, what's the timing on that being ready?
We're working to get it done by the end of this week. Basically, the road bed is down.
And how many does that add?
70.
It's, that, along with the employees we moved out of here, the employee spots we freed up was
88
nice. New spaces.
Okay, that's significant.
And just one final thing on, do you have something else on that?
Well, when is the old train station coming down?
That's a great question. We hope to have to you for your next meeting the Amtrak lease. We've been working with them since we started building that building, trying to finalize the lease, and I think we've got all the terms finally negotiated now, so they got to sign the lease before they'll move over, and we probably shouldn't knock it down until they move over.
Yeah, probably.
We knocked a little bit of it down to move the process along.
Right. Yeah, it might have helped. And then one final thing, baseball is, we continue our negotiations there. I'm hoping to come to you at your next meeting to talk about a request for the CRA extension. I don't want to bring it to you, so I have a couple more final deal terms in place. It could get delayed, but my goal is that comes to you next meeting for discussion. We just got a couple minor, well, not necessarily minor, but a couple of things we're very close on, but we got to get them ironed out. But I just want to give you that update.
That's the 12th, Randy, you're hoping to get that?
That would be the 12th. You have a CRA meeting beforehand, remember, and so it would go to the CRA agency first and then to the commission later on at the next meeting, if we're ready.
Okay. Thank you.
That concludes my report.
Other questions for Randy?
No.
Great. Thanks, Randy. Okay. Larry, City Attorney's report.
I have nothing to report, sorry.
Any questions for the City Attorney?
No.
Okay. Well, we're at citizen comments. We'll wait until the 5 o'clock hour, and until then, we will move on to the consent agenda. Look for a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
I'll second.
Second. Randy, I need to open this for a public comment.
Yes.
Any citizens wishing to come speak to the commission in regards to the consent agenda? You have 3 minutes at the podium. Dan, are you heading to the podium? Okay. That's a rookie mistake, Dan. Great. Seeing none, I'll close the floor. Y'all ready to vote on this?
Yes.
Great. Can we just do it by Michelle's going to take the roll?
I think so.
Great. Michelle?
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McNaughton?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you so much. Back to public hearings. We have, who is up first on this? Jeff?
I need to read the title.
Right. Sorry, Larry. Turn it over to you.
Shall I?
Yes, please. Thank you. Larry, can we have a joint hearing on this?
Yes, you can.
Separate vote? Great.
An ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, amending Chapter 58, Land Development Code, Article 1, Comprehensive Plan, Future Land Use Map, so as to change future land use designations of commercial and low-density residential plan development future land use on the properties at 970, 100, 1008, and 1306 Lauren Avenue, 1141 Benjamin Avenue, and 1313 Lewis Drive, more particularly described herein. And then the next is an ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, amending Chapter 58 Land Development Code, Article 3 Zoning, and the official zoning map so as to change the commercial C3 and low-density residential R2 district designations to plan development PD2 district zoning on the properties. There was a typographical error in the first title. It's 1000 Lauren Avenue. So as to change the district designations to plan development PD2 district zoning on the properties at 970, 1000, 1008, and 1306 Lauren Avenue. 1141 Benjamin Avenue and 1313 Lewis Drive, more particularly described here.
Thank you. Jeff.
So Benjamin Partners Limited and the Sidgan Corp, representing Bubbaloo's Inc., is asking to change the zoning from either commercial or R2 to plan development and add these six properties into the Ravadage PD. And the six properties are the 970, 1000, 1008 Lauren, the 1141 Benjamin, 1313 Lewis Drive, and 1306 Lauren Avenue. These are not changing any of the entitlements, so they're not granting any additional density or permissions to the Ravadage PD. They're still governed by the same rules, same entitlements, but as you can see, it's making it more readily usable by adding some properties and by filling in some holes in the donut, so to speak. So this did go to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and they have recommended approval, and it's before you tonight for that action.
Commissioner McMichael?
Jeff, in the as I looked at the report from P&Z, there was a question. It's on page 44 of our packet for the commission members up here. There was a question about ownership, and I know that it appears that that our attorney at that time addressed that, but I'd like Mr. Brown to do the same thing, just so that I'm clear as to how to proceed on this one.
Yeah, in my opinion, the documents that I reviewed show that Sijin, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and Mr. Bellows are the duly authorized agent on behalf of Bubbaloo's Bodacious Barbecue. And I spoke today to the other person, you know, their attorney, Mr. Miner, I believe it is. I spoke to Howard Marks, and I told Mr. Marks this is first reading, and I said if you can go into the existing court case and get the judge to enjoin this process before second reading, that's fine. We'll follow the court order. But I don't see anything absent a court order that would give us the ability to stop.
Would any action on our part this evening put us in a liable condition?
No, in my opinion, no.
All right, thank you. Okay. That's all I have. Mr. Sprinkle?
I'd like to move it.
Second? I'll second.
Great. Anything else?
You have to do both.
Right.
Both of them. Move both of them.
One at a time.
Move the first one and the second.
Okay, how about we move the first one? Commissioner McMackin is the second.
Yeah, I have a second on the first one, yes, sir.
And Mr. Sprinkle?
I would like to move the second one.
I will second that one as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there any other questions from the commission?
Great.
I will open up the floor to public comment. Anyone wishing to speak on this matter before the commission, please feel free to come up and speak at the podium. Seeing none, I will bring it back. I'll close the floor to public comment. Anything else at the commission level? Are you all ready to vote?
And we're voting on these one at a time.
We're voting on these one at a time.
Yes.
Okay. Michelle, would you please read the roll on the first?
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Leary?
Yes.
And now the second?
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Leary?
Yes.
Thank you. Let's move on to 11B, the vacation and abandonment of a portion of Lauren Avenue within the Ravadage plan development. Larry, is this for you to read as well?
Yes, sir. An ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, vacating and abandoning a portion of Lauren Avenue within the Ravadage Plan Development and Home Acres Subdivision area, more particularly described herein.
Okay. Troy?
The city received a request to vacate a portion of Lauren Avenue, approximately the northern half, just south of Kendall, and it's shown right here in the yellow. We've gotten all of the necessary sign-offs from utility companies. The developer has a plan for a project that encompasses that right-of-way, and in order to continue to maintain traffic movement, he is proposing a new road and the new road would continue basically Lauren Avenue continuing to the west to intersect with Bennett. Now this shows Bennett in the realigned position. Right now Bennett is due north and south here, so that road will align to Bennett wherever Bennett is, and then there will be an easement over that road for the public use. At this point, the city attorney is working on the easement language, but it'll be a typical, you know, public use easement for ingress and egress. You know, it won't be able to, you know, distinguish different users. It's for public use. The thing that we are working on also is, you know, with this road vacation, it's, you know, we're not approving a road design, but we have been working with the developer to provide a road that will meet all of the needs of the service vehicles for the restaurant itself. And so I'm, you know, I've just got another version of it today, and, you know, we will ensure that that roadway will function for the deliveries of the restaurant. So,
okay, Commissioner Cooper.
Is there some sense of time urgency that would keep us from allowing the attorney that Larry spoke with for Mr. Minor to consider his position between now and the next public hearing on the first ordinance, so that we would be only moving forward to vacate this once it was very clear that there was no disputed
Well, I mean, ownership? I think this is in the same condition. It takes two readings, and each reading is going to stand on its own. And so, you know, I can't answer the question as far as the timing. You know, the developer could. I just know that we've received a request. You know, we've gone through, we've worked through the, you know, how can traffic continue, and you know, so we're acting on that request.
If I could, yes. I believe it was a month and a half ago, if not 2 months ago, that I sent an email to staff, to Mr. Bellows and his attorney, and also to Mr. Minor and his attorney, telling them that this is going back 2 months ago approximately, I've reviewed the documents. It seems as if the paperwork shows that Sijin has the authority to act on behalf of Bubbaloo's. And I said to Mr. Marks, the attorney for Mr. Minor, if you wish to get an injunction to preserve the status quo, you need to start working on that. I spoke to him again today, and he's got still 2 weeks. And that's the purpose of a preliminary injunction, is to preserve the status quo. So if he's got a solid argument, because I just don't want us to be in the position of setting a precedent that we're going to referee disputes. I'm going to look at the paper, the surface of it, and it appears to be in order. Let those private litigants, not at city expense, but at their expense, determine who's got rights in their court case. They have a pending court case. So I think there, in my opinion, there's ample time, because they had 2 months ago through the present plus another 2 weeks. And as Commissioner Sprinkle knows, you can get an emergency injunction hearing on 48 hours notice. You know, so there's plenty of time for those people to assert their interests, if they have those interests, you know, to assert.
I just wanted to make sure that we weren't doing anything that would cause harm relative to their traffic circulation or anything. I don't want to harm a business.
Of course not.
When we're in a question situation.
Yes.
It takes me back to the Capon House and that whole situation that we had there, when there was a question of ownership. And if it sounds like to me that his attorney has been given ample opportunity to respond, and there's time for him to respond.
Yes, that's okay. Exactly right.
Commissioner McFadden?
Troy, I'm assuming the restaurant you're referring to is Bubbaloo's?
That's correct.
And that this would be providing access to that site. Is there... Is that road in place prior to their losing any other access? I mean, if this is essential for their service continuation,
yes,
is this road built before
that is correct.
Anything else occurs?
Yes. No part of...
So before we're abandoning Lauren, we have a road in place that services...
Well, before the physical removal of Lauren... This new road would be in place and functioning. I mean, that would have to be done in 2 weeks.
No, but before Lauren is removed physically.
That's correct. That, yes.
Then this road would be in place and functioning. Is that part of
whatever agreement that we are, that will be part of the agreement, yes.
And that it would be adequate for whatever service trucks have to service the restaurant?
That's correct, yes.
And you answered my other question, that it would extend to, I mean, the drawing that we have that we had shown us, and it's on our page 51, shows it going to the future alignment of Bennett. Right. Whatever road is constructed right now would have to connect with Bennett where it might be.
That's correct.
At that time. So that is also part of this.
Yes.
And Larry, would you, where are we with that, with the relocation of the road? And I know it's tied up, and is it still tied up in the billboard discussion?
As far as the Monzidae parcel, that is tied up in the billboard discussion. That is, it's a somewhat frustrating situation that I think is best addressed by letting Monzidae and Max Media hash out their internal issues. That's kind of gotten to a place where Mr. Bellows and his company and Clear Channel and the city and Orange County have all reached agreement. And we thought we had reached an agreement with Max Media, and they were sort of in partnership with Monzidae, the property owner. But now there seems to be some dispute between the two of them. So hopefully that'll resolve in the next 30, 45 days. But okay. You're right. You can't realign Bennett Road without either condemning a chunk of the Monzidae parcel or getting a voluntary negotiated conveyance.
Great. Do we have any other questions? Look for a motion.
I'd like to move it.
Fantastic. Second?
Anyone? I'll second.
Great. Opens up for public discussion. Anyone wishing to speak on this matter, please step forward. Please come right up to the podium, sir. Andrew Gilletiga.
Thank you for letting me speak. I'm Dr. Robert Hess from Winter Park Veterinary Hospital. We're located, I guess, just west of Bennett Avenue. The question I have is just concerning this little change. It really doesn't affect us a lot yet, except maybe some traffic flow as we get onto Bennett Road. But as we look at the new proposal of saying, okay, we're going to merge this with Bennett, what's proposed right now is that it's going to cut off access to my hospital. And people are going to have to, if they put a Dunkin' Donuts or whatever on that corner, have to drive through their parking lot to get to my office. And that's not feasible. And we're also under control of somebody else access to my office. So I'm a little leery of, without having a big use plan of where this is going to go down the road, as compared to just cutting off Lauren Avenue right now.
Okay.
Do we have something larger?
We can take a look at it. It's hard for, I think all of us are having trouble visualizing exactly what he's speaking about.
I don't know if this is on here or not.
I think I'm just trying to get it. Let me zoom in a little bit.
It's
a pretty good size.
It's
like an engineer's
mess. Mercy. Which one is he
out of? Well, this is my office here. And my parking lot right there.
Now, is that Bennett next to you?
That's Bennett right here.
Okay. So he's on the other side.
The change is going to occur going this way.
Correct. Okay.
Along this one.
So you're currently accessed off of Bennett. I think on the drawing.
I'm accessed off Bennett right here.
I think the drawing you have, Troy, shows a
right here.
Kind of a shaded in driveway that's there right now.
Yeah.
What do we?
I mean, that's probably your driveway.
No, but
right. I mean, bear in mind. I mean, this is not an approved plan for Bennett, and obviously,
yeah.
Can we do this?
You can't cut off.
Troy, before second reading, can we get with the doctor and make sure he has access to his property? I mean, if this comes to second reading, I can tell you.
What you're approving today doesn't have anything to do with the Bennett realignment.
Right.
So, but it's a valid point that we need to work out before we ever look at realigning Bennett.
We're dealing with Lauren today.
Correct.
Only
right.
Lauren, exactly. And then the Bennett is going to come into play.
Showing that's going to come out, Lauren. That new road you're putting in is going to come out right at my entrance.
Very close to it, yes.
Yeah, just a little.
So,
yes.
Okay.
That is correct. As far as I understand the alignment.
Yeah, from what I've gotten so far.
Okay.
So that's my issue with it. I mean, that's great to have. I mean, even Bennett Road being moved is great, but the problem with that unless some changes are made in what's been proposed so far.
I think it's a valid concern. I think staff has heard it, and they will get in touch with you, doctor, and make sure that we take care of the situation.
Okay, I appreciate
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Steve.
Yes.
That is a complaint that I've heard from numerous people recently, is the concern about seeing things in our agenda packet that become part of public record that don't reflect the reality of what is in place. And I've gotten actually two phone calls on that, and I don't know, Randy, what our policy is about that. I know it's one thing to have what the future plan is, but maybe we do need to make sure that the current status of things are reflected in our public record, because unfortunately when you go to look at the record, this is all you would see, and
it's not exactly correct.
Right.
Well, but the previous page showed the existing condition.
Does it show everything there?
Right.
What page, Randy?
Well, just the one right in front of the
future land use map?
Yeah.
Which page are you looking at, Randy? What page on the agenda? 51?
50 is the one before that. But it,
the color is
better. Straight all the way down to.
But I think to Commissioner Cooper's point, we received an email too earlier on that was saying that somebody's property was included when it's actually not.
That's correct.
And I get it, it's just for demonstration purposes and for discussion purposes, but
I think it does go on the record as a document.
It goes on the record as a document, doesn't go on the record as
an approved action.
So
it's the perception.
What we've done today, or what we're going to vote on, is Lauren, but we have an understanding that staff is going to get with the doctor to talk about what might be happening on Bennett. Is that where we are?
To access to.
All right.
That's correct. Anyone else like to speak to the commission?
Good afternoon. My name is Sam Miner, and my address is 6319 Gibson Drive, Orlando, Florida, 32809. I am the owner and operator of Bubbaloo's Winter Park, and I have an 8-year leasehold on 1471 Lee Road, where the Bubbaloo's barbecue is being operated. I take exception about Bubbaloo's or Howard Marks or myself having 2 months' notice of anything other than the proposed land use change plan. That was one. I received an email 5 days ago from Jeff Briggs, and Jeff said the staff has approved the vacation of Lauren. And I said, that's impossible. That's the only way I can get delivery trucks in and out. And we had an agreement with Dan Bellows, that was the Bubbaloo's, that we would be able to use the access up to Lewis.
So I'm sorry, Mr. Reiner. Michelle, would you start the clock, please? Thank you. Sorry, Sam.
I got to tell you, we're a moving target, and putting me on a clock is pretty unfair. So 5 days ago, I reached out and tried to find a traffic engineer who was available on 24-hour notice to give you an opinion as to what's going on. And I was able to sign on Saturday morning with Traffic Engineering Data Solutions of DeBary, Florida. Well, they basically have a big challenge, and Mr. Attaway knows it, and this is a moving target. Did you hear him say just a few minutes ago, we've got a revised drawing this morning? You don't have a legal easement defined. You don't have a curb cut defined. The turning radiuses Mr. Attaway uses for a 40-foot truck, I had a 53-foot vehicle there today unloading my groceries from Cheney Brothers. It takes a snap of a finger for you all to wipe out my driveway access, and you can tell me it'll come sooner than later, but what you need to do is you need to, until the matter is fully resolved with a defined easement, the DOT access agreement, you can't abandon Lauren Avenue because Dan's got some building he wants to put up there, because it will bankrupt my business, put me out of business, put the Little Red House out of business. Melanie Montanay is not out of business yet, but the disputes going on will put her out of business. Dr. Hess and his family are incredible friends, and what we're doing is giving Dan a shot at a 50-foot easement. In exchange, instead of giving us back 50 feet, he's narrowed it down to 40 feet. I don't have access for my trucks to get in now or later, unless it's redesigned, and we need to have a more open forum where when Mr. Attaway gets a plan, I get a copy of the plan so I can give it to my attorney who will take it to an Orange County judge. So today I'm asking you not to consider any action on the abandonment of Lauren Avenue as proposed by staff.
Thank you.
Dan Bellows, 411 West New England Avenue. Okay, a couple things. The realignment, Dan Bellows representing Benjamin Partners LTD and the Sitgan Corporation. The suggested or proposed realignment of Bennett Avenue, as stated, is not part of this request tonight, nor is it part of Benjamin Partners, the developer's request ever. This suggested realignment of Bennett came from 12 DRC meetings with the county, City of Maitland, City of Winter Park, FDOT, Lynx, and some other, I think, Metro Plan, as something that they wanted to have this realignment with executive across the street. So it may or may not happen. As the developer of Benjamin, should the City of Winter Park want it to happen, the City of Winter Park has the ability to force Benjamin Partners to accommodate this realignment. But I just wanted the commission and the community to know this isn't something that we came up with. As part of this, a new traffic signal that does not exist would also materialize. With that said, exactly the way the commission handled the vacating of Kendall Avenue between Lewis Drive and Bennett Avenue is what is being requested of you today for this north portion of Lauren Avenue. Whereas, until such time as an approved plan by staff that met staff's needs with an accompanying easement document, no part of the right-of-way that is being requested to be vacated would be eliminated. To my point, the city has formally vacated Kendall Avenue between Lewis and Bennett, and that asphalt still exists today and cannot be removed until such time as Morgan Lane comes into play and is active and open. This drawing that you see in front of you has the turning radius here and here to accommodate a semi-trailer, and it's got all the traffic turning points and everything to it. But the bottom line, without coming up with this engineering, the request before you simply states the road would not be ripped up until such time as staff and engineering, city attorney, easement document all comes into place. The shaded area here is the three lots that make up the Bubbaloo's restaurant. There is no FDOT involvement here. We're not interrupting this access at all. You still can come in, and again, the semi will make it out to Bennett, wherever Bennett may be.
Dan, you're over here as the applicant, correct?
Yes.
All right, you can have more time.
Thank you. at no point would the Hesses with their business be put out of business or subject to not having access. We are here to work with the city and all of the governmental agencies that proposed this modification. And quite frankly, I think it's going to be the city and the county, et cetera, to figure out how to accommodate Mr. Hess, or the alignment, you know, probably isn't going to happen. We are going to be required as Benjamin Partners to bring the proposed modified Lauren Avenue out to Bennett, wherever it may be today or in the future. We are not here to cause any issues for the Hesses. So I believe we've got our ducks in a row. This is exactly the request of the prior Kendall, and the road is not going to be ripped up until such time as the city staff, city attorney, are happy with the official easement documents and engineering.
All right, thank you. Any questions for the applicant? Tom?
Dan,
would you just say, would you mind taking a few questions?
One quick question,
sure.
And this may be a question for either you or Troy. At 20 feet wide, is Lauren now a one-way in off of Bennett? I've got a 20-foot curb face to curb face. Is that essentially one-way?
The dimensions that you see on here is what was provided to us from the city, but then also our traffic engineer is Mad Engineering. It is a 20-foot double drive lane with an additional 2 feet of curb, so that's now 24 feet, and then it is a 5-foot sidewalk. So you actually have 24 feet of drive.
Yeah, I mean, it's a typical two-way road. And
right, that's my question. Does that constitute a two-way access?
That's there? Correct,
it's not
yes.
One way off of Bennett, just coming back in.
It's two-way.
And Troy, you're sufficient with the 39-foot radius and the 35-foot radius to get a semi around there?
Well,
and I'll rely on your...
I just got this revised today. I have not run the numbers and put the template on it. Dan has worked with us. When I've given him other concerns, he's made the changes. This right here, you know, like I said, we're not going to agree to it until it meets the criteria for that, and this will probably take a little tweaking.
Okay.
So,
I'd like to move to table until appropriate staff work has been completed.
Second. Motion fails for lack of a second. Troy, I think what you're hearing now from the commission and from certain and from people that are involved in the neighborhood that this is a concern. So before second reading, can we try to wrap some of this stuff up, please?
Yeah, we intend to have the easement and the final layout of the road with all of the turning movement templates on it, and you can see that.
Great.
Go to P&Z?
These don't.
That doesn't have to.
The road shouldn't have to.
Shouldn't have to because it's just the road. The zone, nothing else went there. Okay.
Both the geometry and engineering of the roadway should, I doubt, would have gone to P&Z.
Do any more folks that would like to step up and make comments?
I appreciate that. I'm Jean Hess, one of the Hesses that Mr. Bello said he was going to be very careful not to hurt us, and I really appreciate that concern about our business and our ability to take care of many, many animals and wild animals that our people find on the streets. They bring them to us. I think I'm pleased that you're not going forward at this point, as I understand it, because the issues related to developing communities, related to having many different organizations in the planning phase, are so complex, and they don't necessarily appear to be that way at the right time. At the time that you're making one decision. So I thank you for considering that. I'm concerned that if you go forward with, you know, Lauren, there's other things that are going to pop up that we wouldn't have thought about. And I know there's issues with the Department of Transportation and the road of Bennett as to who owns it. And so I appreciate your sensitivity about that. Thank you.
I'm Douglas Loft, 2633 Verona Trail, Winter Park. I own the Vanson building at 1231 Kendall since the 90s. You ready? I want to go on record that we object that the master plans admitted into official records for Rabidage continue to misrepresent our rightful ownership of our property at 1231 Kendall Avenue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Law.
Good evening. My name is Lurleen Fletcher. I live at 811 English Court, and I don't live in the area, but I ride off up in the area. And to the commission, I want to ask the question. Do this Laura Street, I think I'm saying it right, is that in the streets of the city property instead of the contracting development property? Don't the streets belong to the city? Why is every time Bellows builds up something, he wants to block it off to keep the public from riding through it, just like he did on Hamina? That's up by Lyman and New England and Weber. So to me, if we are paying taxes on the street, why should he be able to take the public property and put it into and vacate it into his development so the public won't have no access to ride through where he's working on? It being a big concern to me, because every time he get ready to build things now, he wanted to go all onto his property. He want to block the citizens for riding through on something that the taxpayer is paying for. And that's a big concern to me about taking streets and just vacating them and trying keeping business, people that been there for years, for getting their products to them, but his product gonna be able to come to him because that street gonna be vacated just for the property of the people that he's billing for.
Thank you, Ms. Fletcher.
Sally Flynn, 1400, excuse me, Highland Road. I've been sitting there listening to all of this talk. Have you all been listening to all the if, ands, and buts, and changes, and misrepresentation? I don't see how four smart people on this commission can move forward with this without a workshop or some more discussion. I would ask you to table it so you can do it in a sensible manner. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Flynn. Anyone else? Seeing none, I'll close the floor to public comment. You all ready to vote? Michelle?
Commissioner Sprinkle?
No.
Commissioner Cooper?
No.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Leary?
No. Okay. That motion fails.
What
time do we have?
3 o'clock.
It's always 3.
Stop on 3.
It's always 3.
4:49.
There we go.
We are now at, where are we, Randy? 11C, the request of the City of Winter Park. Larry?
Yes, sir. An ordinance. An ordinance.
I'm sorry. Do you want to do this now, or do you want to... 5 o'clock public comment, or do you want to?
I think this is going to carry on.
This may go more than 5 minutes. I'm just asking the question.
I think we can probably, Randy, Larry, can we take public comment now before the 5 o'clock hour?
Well, you have the right to, and then you can just ask later on
if we'd like somebody.
I wouldn't mind doing that.
If you can do it now, and if someone,
this one might go more than 5 minutes.
The other two might be very quick. If we want to, no.
I'd rather not hop.
Okay.
Let's see if we can. We'll open up the floor for public comment. Anybody wishing to speak to the commission on anything that's not on the agenda today, please feel free to come forward and state your issue. Tom, great idea. Try it like we have any. Okay. We can check
that off the list. Fire away.
Larry, let's move ahead to 11C, please.
Thank you. An ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, amending Chapter 58, Land Development Code, Article 1, Comprehensive Plan, by amending goals, objectives, and policies text within the future land use element related to the plan development, future land use designations, combining PD1 and PD2 future land use designations, deleting the maps indicating the candidate areas for planned development future land use, and deleting the parameters for the creation and establishment of planned development zoning districts and other policy text relating to planned development future land use, providing for severability, codification, conflicts, and an effective date.
Dory.
Good afternoon. If the board will excuse me, I'm going to rest my fractured foot and sit in the penalty box, if I may, while we go through this item. One of the recommendations that came out of the WRT study that was presented to the commission and went through several boards in September was the concept of combining the two planned development land use categories that are currently in the future land use plan. Currently, we have a PD1 and a PD2 category. They've been in the plan since 2009, and to date, we have not had a development come in under either one of those categories. Based on the discussion from WRT and following some conversation with P&Z members as well as EDAB members, staff has made the following recommendation to you. We have presented language that combines both those categories into one PD future land use district. We are recommending to eliminate the four candidate area maps, but maintain geographical restrictions for locations for PDs to be adjacent to four-lane roadways such as Lee Road, Fairbanks, Orange Avenue, Denning Drive, Aloma, and maintain the PD land use future land use category would not be allowed within the Central Business District nor the downtown core area. And staff has defined that core area as Fairbanks, Interlochen, Webster, and Pennsylvania Avenues. It removes the parking garage FAR requirements from the FAR calculations for the overall PDs. It eliminates the development standard text such as the minimum and maximum parcel size, lot coverage, setbacks, green space, etc. These are covered in the Land Development Code. We try to look at this land use category as a land use category. One of the recommendations that was made at the time and that we've also heard is creating more policy guidelines in our future land use rather than restating our Land Development Code in that. And it eliminates the direction as to the establishment of PD zoning districts that have already been adopted. We went through the we created a working group with PD members and our planning and zoning members, as well as Economic Development Advisory Board members, which was also something I gave you as far as the guidelines and the worksheet we prepared last fall. We sat down with those members and worked through some of this language. This did go to P&Z with a recommendation of approval, and we are bringing it here today. The process that we would follow for all of these large-scale cycle amendments would be a first reading now. We will send it up to the state for review by various state agencies, and we will come back with a final reading in probably in August based on the time frame we're currently under at this point. Staff is happy to answer any questions.
Great. Commissioners. Dory, when we've talked in here about removing the parking garage FAR from the calculations, that's specific to the PD.
It's only covered in the PD land use. We're not removing it from the comprehensive plan in any other zoning district.
So it's specific to the PD
Correct.
Zoning district.
The height restrictions that are currently in place based on the height map are still in place.
When we did
combine the two districts, we did lean towards the PD2 requirements as the overall requirements for a plan development, but it doesn't maximize the 25 dwelling units per acre, which are currently in the comprehensive plan and in the land development code. So when we blended the two, we tended to go for the PD2 side of it with regard to the requirements, but we're not removing any other parking garage requirements from any other zoning district or land use.
What would the effect be of leaving those parking lot or parking garage requirements, doing everything else on here and leaving the garage requirements the same as they currently exist? Is that
sprawl?
Just
the it is
and I ask this because I struggle, just to let you know where I'm coming from, I struggle with removing them completely. Mm-hmm. And
It may be simplistic, but as I was reminded over the weekend, a garage takes up space and volume and size, and it has four walls usually and such. And to take that totally out of the FAR, conceptually I'm with you, or with staff's recommendation here. I don't have a problem combining the districts. I don't have a problem with any, probably of the four of the five things that are listed here. I still struggle with removing garages from the FAR.
Of a PD.
Yes, I just struggle with that one. So I'm thrown out a lifeline. I'm asking the question: what if that were to stay?
If that stays the way we look at the way that a plan development, it would be similar to how it would be today. The building, the density and intensity of the building would the FAR of the overall development would be lessened by needing to cast that onto the parking garage site as well. One of the reasons that we wanted to we discussed talking about the parking garage moving is the ability to see a project come in at its full FAR, also allowing then more open space in that negotiation. If you're going to get a parking garage, we do expect to see more open space instead of the swaths of parking lot. It really, looking at the parking garage going into the overall FAR does, in our opinion, help stop the proliferation of major amounts of asphalt around a property. It takes into account that garage as part of the overall project.
I think Dory's. I'm sorry.
No.
Is it safe to say this you touched on it a little bit. This provides staff some flexibility through the negotiations of the PD, and this helps you get what we want.
It does, and what we've learned is when you have the parking garage into the FAR, and it was also discussed in the WRT report, when you have the garage as part of the FAR, you never really are able to capitalize on the total FAR of that building, because you have to allocate some of that space to the parking garage. So if we're going to do that, then we're really not truly getting a 200% FAR. You're really getting 150 or 130 or 100% FAR, because you've got to capture the garage into the overall FAR. You're not really giving the development that opportunity to see what they could bring in and what we can negotiate.
I think Sylvia pointed this out. This was one of her major findings, or one of her major issues. Correct me if I'm wrong, but she said this is pretty unusual to have the parking captured within the FAR and captured in the FAR, and is limiting, and something she thought should be rectified fairly quickly. She also mentioned that it's an issue of sprawl too. We touched on that a little bit. The CNL, while people don't like parking garages, I'm not sure if the parking garage is tucked in the proper manner, it seems to work well with certain areas. And yet, when you have something like the Heritage Park building go up, and now we have this gigantic parking lot out there, I don't think that's exactly what people are looking for either. So I'm okay with this, and I'll support this. But I think, Commissioner, I struggled with that a little bit too. When I started thinking about the flexibility it provides staff, when I went back to what Sylvia had originally recommended, when I started looking at the sprawl issue, there's a way to do it. There's a way to do it gracefully, and I think if we can turn that over to staff and give them the flexibility to do that, we can get what we want.
So and part of that scares me a little bit, because we used to, back when I had dark hair. We had conditional uses, and we handled things through conditional uses, and we've kind of gotten away from that in the context of, I can recall on P&Z sitting up here and literally saying, yes, if we're going to give you one more story, then we want X amount of open space. And I haven't been comfortable with the level of our overseeing of those type of things in the last few years. This is something Tom's struggling with, and I haven't bought into the FAR in the garage fully. Again, I
I wish we would have had this in place when we were doing CNL and the Cascade development, because I think we might have been able to have a way to marry those two and have 1 and 1 equal 3 and been better off the whole way around. But we didn't have this, and we couldn't bring those two together. So I deal with these all the time, and PDs work when mm-hmm. they're done well mm-hmm. and correctly. And the one thing I struggle about is just the FAR with the garage. And I'm going to listen to other comments and whatnot tonight before I act upon that. But again, I'm letting you know that I'm struggling with that one aspect of this whole, we'll say, motion that's coming for us.
Sure. That's right. Thank you. Commissioner Franklin?
Well, I think FAR really stands for the living area, and I don't struggle with that part of it as much, because I don't see why that should be included in that, because you don't include the FAR for the parking on the outside, mm-hmm. and so it doesn't make much sense to me. But here's to the real point is, how many PDs have we had even come in and ask for this?
None.
None. So what it tells me is that there's something not right in the plan we have, because a plan development, I mean, the city of Winter Park is the very first plan development in the state of Florida, folks. And so we know plan developments work, because we live in this beautiful community that was created as a result of some plan development. So I certainly don't want to open things up in a way that's going to create problems, but I'd like to see if we know there's a place for plan developments, and we do, I think that most of us would agree with that, then we want that to occur, and we want that to happen. Obviously, the rules have already been pointed out to us that they didn't agree. So tonight we're addressing three of those issues. This is the first one, because they didn't agree. So let's see if we can make them agree. And let's also agree that maybe we need to change them so that we can get a plan development, because there's not been one to come forward.
Well, and I think it's safe to say also, just to clarify for the record, that plan development's only, or we're talking 3 acres and above. Correct.
Well, we don't have that. We don't have a minimum acre restriction in our proposal. We did take out the maximum acre restriction of a maximum of 3 acres in here. We didn't put a minimum size requirement. I think based on the requirements of a PD, the scope that the Land Development Code requires a developer to go through for a PD, I think that in its own right probably will limit the amount of the size. I mean, you're only going to do... Based on the amount of work and sure. the amount of effort that goes into this, if a straight zoning district work and you could get it in fast and quick and, right. and be done with it, it was
rather than going through the PD process.
Right, and we did talk to this with about this to planning and zoning as well. The likelihood is you're not going to jump through the amount of hoops yeah. that are required and the amount of negotiation for something that was relatively small in size.
Yeah, you don't volunteer for one of these.
Right.
If you can do it through straight zoning and whatnot, that's
sure.
that's the way you would usually want to go, because these can be time consuming and,
right.
and resource consuming as far as an applicant goes.
But,
so,
right. but as far as staff is concerned, I'm sorry, Commissioner. If as far as staff is concerned, if it would give the commission some comfort to put some size, to put a minimum size on here, that's something we could easily work into the PD land use category and work into the land development code as well.
Sure.
Dory, what would be the advantage of putting a, I mean, I've never run across one that said you had to
I haven't either, but if it
PD,
gives some
it's
comfort.
It's usually, yeah. there may be a cap on a size somewhere, but I've, right. I personally have not run across an ordinance anywhere that said you had to be at least an acre to be a PD or 3 acres.
I'm throwing that out there to give some comfort to
no, again,
something
I,
along
there may,
the,
that may exist. I haven't.
Right. I've never seen one that has the minimum size.
Dory, the reason I brought that up is because I think that there's some people out there that think PDs are flying off the shelves in the city of Winter Park, right. and people are applying for them, and their yeah. thousands can appear tomorrow, when the reality of the situation is you have to, that's not necessarily the case, and they're usually only utilized because the process is so laborious when you start putting pieces of parcels together to make a larger.
In the time I've been here, in the time that Jeff has been here, in the time that this has been on the books, I would say that the only folks who have ever talked to us about a PD are property owners who own more than 4+ acres of land. Okay. That would be the only, those are the only conversations we've had of people who have a larger tract of land who want to quite frankly, do more than has been permitted, and we have said no.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Cooper.
Yes, I kind of would like to share a different perspective on this. I was involved in the Comprehensive Plan Task Force. I was on the Planning and Zoning Board when we evaluated the plan development, and I was on the commission when it came forward. I have had hours of negotiations with people relative to how do we redevelop the Fairbanks corridor. How do we maintain our character and our uniqueness? How do we make sure that we do no harm when we bring new developments to our community? A lot of discussion went into that. There was an understanding that we might need to increase our commercial tax base. There was an understanding, Sarah, that there are right places for planned developments, but don't get confused. It's worth the effort. Our existing commercial and office zoning allows a 45% floor area ratio. That means that your relationship of the lot to what you can build is 45%. These new planned developments that we are so casually discussing here start at 130% FAR and go as high as 250% FAR. This is a huge change in the magnitude of development that will come to this community. And I personally believe that it's not in keeping with the character of Winter Park. I believe that there are places, and there was a lot of negotiation that went into trying to figure out what places it would do the least harm. And I think the comprehensive plan ended up maybe with four places. Maybe they're not the right four places, but it was put in place to try to give the community an opportunity to see if we could indeed absorb that increased density without damaging what we are, without overcrowding our schools, congesting our roads, eating up our open space, all for the sake of more development. And what I would say to you is that PDs can be used for residential. What you can borrow money on these days is high-density apartments. Is that what Winter Park wants? Because that is what we are encouraging through the use of these large planned developments. And I think what we're going to see is that in the long run, we will damage what we have and the value of what we have. And I just hate to see that. So I guess where I'm at is the two big things for me are, of course, a parking garage is mass. It is mass. It covers up the sky, it prohibits the trees, and it takes up places on these lots. It is a building and absolutely should be included in the floor area ratio for the community of Winter Park. And yes, indeed, maybe we are different than what you see every day, and praise God for that. We are indeed different, and I'm proud of that. And the second issue to me that's so important is where do these planned developments belong? What we did initially was, and I came out on the losing end of a lot of these things, I want you to know, but ultimately, the comprehensive plan identified areas where we thought that we could test that level of density without damaging our residential or our city core. And of course they are open to change. Of course they're open to change. And the idea was that it would be a test program in place for 5 years. It prohibited the use of the PD2 any place to the east of the 1792 corridor. What we are now doing is we are saying that unless you're in the area from Pennsylvania to Interlochen and from Webster to Fairbanks, you are eligible for this planned development zoning. And I guess my take on this is if a developer won't take the time to sit down with the city, when he has the opportunity to get 130 to 250% FAR instead of 45% FAR, then there's something wrong there. I believe that we are opening the aperture way too wide. I think that there is some compromise, possibly, in the 45% FAR for office and commercial. Certainly understand that. But going from 45% FAR to allowing 130 to 250% FAR without ever testing this. We live in Florida. Florida has the Burt J. Harris Act. And I'm going to tell you something, if you give it, you can't take it away. And frankly, I think it would be a mistake. It was a test program, and I think it needs to be limited. And I think to open the aperture like this is irresponsible and very damaging to our quality of life. And I just, that's where I'm at.
Thank you. Dory, by increasing the opportunity for a PD application to have greater FAR, we're not approving that.
No, not at all. And actually, we're not doing away with the office land use. We're not doing away with commercial land use. We're combining the PD1 and the PD2. The PD1 land use today allows 130 to 175% FAR. The PD2 allows for 130 to 200% FAR and up to 5-day stories, which is limited by the height map and the comprehensive plan. We are not doing away with the height map. The only change would be that rather than limiting it to 17 units per acre, we would be allowing the PD category, the combined category, to have a density of 25 units per acre, and that would be something that would be a negotiated entitlement. Mm-hmm. So these are not new FARs. The FARs are the same as they've always been for the PD, PD1, PD2. We're just combining the two and allowing for, rather than 175% FAR in the PD1, we're allowing for 200% FAR in the PD category.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody on this commission that wants to see 5 to 8 stories going up in the downtown core.
And staff is not coming forward with any changes to the height map.
I understand. I just want to make sure that people are.
And to clarify that, it's 4 stories on 1792, it's 3 stories on Fairbanks, it's 3 stories on Denning, it's 3 stories on Orange. Those height maps are not being changed.
Thank you.
Dory.
Commissioner Sprinkle,
I'm sorry. Dory, can you tell us the names or some places that people that might be interested in looking at plan developments, can you tell us some that they could look at?
We have,
anywhere. I like Seaside. Is that not a plan development?
That is a plan development.
Rosemary Beach, is that not a plan development?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I just happen to love those places because I've been to them, and I don't want to ever leave this place. Winter Park was a plan development. So, I mean, just name some so people won't think a plan development. There's this real bad idea that for some reason a plan development's a dirty word.
Right. Okay? Baldwin Park.
Baldwin Park's one.
Celebration was a plan development. There's some areas in Seminole County. The Colonial Town Center in Seminole County, which is the office mixed use. Development off of 46, that was a planned development. The Altamont Springs, the large downtown, that's a little over our scope, but it's on I-4, that was a planned development. Those are projects that have been planned developments.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that Commissioner Sprinkle understood. I don't have a problem with planned developments. We're talking about the level of density here is what I object to, and certainly to removing the parking garages from the core area ratio. Plan developments give us an opportunity to not only negotiate with the developer to get superior things for the city of Winter Park, but it also gives us an opportunity for shared drainage and shared parking. All those are very positive things. The issue that I have is removing the parking garages from the floor area ratio and allowing without any limitations to size these plan developments to come into every area of the city, except that very small area between Pennsylvania, Interlochen, Webster, and Fairbanks. That's my concern. It's where we're allowing it and the level of density that we're allowing and taking the parking garage out of the FAR. Because those levels of FAR are only palatable if the parking garage is in that. And that was the way they were formulated. They were formulated with the understanding that we had them in, then we took them out, and that's how those numbers got changed. But if you look around this community, in fact, Andy, is there a way that someone could put these photographs up for me?
Sure.
I have them on a desk, if that's easier.
Yeah.
I just want us to look at what it means when we talk about a parking garage not contributing to the mass of the building, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about running floor area ratio calculations. And floor area ratio, all that means is how big the building is in relationship to the lot. So this is a very nice development that's going in, but I just want you to see the size of that parking garage. Now, it just so happens that this parking garage is smaller than a parking garage would be in a commercial development, because you require less parking for residential than you do for commercial. So that is the parking garage, and I think there should be a photograph there, Randy. That's the development that is associated with that parking garage, and this is right over here on the corner of Canton and Denning. And the question isn't, is that a nice project? Is that a nice residential unit? The question is that Winter Park? And that's the reason the very woman who came in and recommended that we look at combining the PDs and taking the garage out said, first and foremost, you must have a community visioning. We must all sit down and lay it on the table and honestly and openly discuss with one another who wants that and who doesn't. And the taxpayers need to be aware, and we need to see the trade-offs. But there's another one. I just want you to see what we're talking about here. That's the building downtown that everybody recognizes. That's the Douglas Grand. And the calculations here, I apologize if my calculations are slightly off. They may be. I am not a city planner, and you couldn't get anyone else to answer the questions for me. So this is my best attempt, and it has been looked at by other people in the industry, so it's close. But if you look at that, the FAR, which is the judge of how big a building is in relationship to its lot, is 191 without the parking garage. You add that parking garage in there, it goes up to 384. So when we're talking about these buildings, people need to appreciate what that means. I mean, the question is, are we going to be able to maintain our desirability? Is 32789 going to continue to be the desired zip code if we continue to allow ourselves to become generic through this high density development? And my take on is that that's doubtful. This last picture here, I'm going to show you one more time. This is the Park Place with the parking garage. It's only 91% without the parking garage. So if you don't include that parking garage in there, you'd look at this and say, oh, that's great, it's under 100%. As soon as you add that parking garage, it goes up to 321. So the question is this the scale of development we want? And the reason I would like to see a cap on the size of these properties is because the only thing that controls the size of the building is the size of the building lot. So if you allow building lots 5 and 8 acres large, you're going to get buildings that cover those lots. And I rest my case. I just think it's a very big mistake for us to open that aperture. Randy, thank you so much.
Randy, would you put that first slide back up for me, please? Thank you. I think this is a great photo for a number of reasons. One, it's a little unfair seeing the parking garage with nothing surrounding it. But I think if you look to the west, south, and north of it, you see gigantic parking lots to accommodate buildings. And when this is all said and done and we have a beautiful frontage, you won't see the parking garage as much as you see these parking lots today. And when you look at the corner of Denning, that old parking lot was there and it's now wrapped by senior affordable housing, we were able to accommodate cars, still have a beautiful structure in front of them. And I, you know, that's where I'm at. I would like to see some of these parking garages that are tucked behind so that we can accommodate some more work.
Absolutely.
So I don't necessarily have a problem with it for that reason. I don't want parking garages all over the place, but I certainly don't want surface parking lots that are the size of airfields out there too.
Well, you know what I've been trying to always about, Steve, is every time you talk to people about parking garages, developers, they say to you, oh, but you get so much more green space. And intuitively, that makes sense. But if you go look at all these projects, we're not getting the green space. We're just getting more building.
Well,
that's the problem. You look at this building lot, you don't see a whole lot of green space going down.
Well, you've got it in the middle, and you've got it on the outside. And I think there's a nice garden right across the street there that the senior affordable housing that put in there to accommodate that. So I think there's flexibility in there. But again, I think this is something that can be worked out through the PD process, giving staff some flexibility, bring it before this commission when we can work with them. So
The lot coverage of the residents of Winter Park that you just looked at was at 55%, and that included the parking garage. So there is, they did meet the requirements of open space and put the parking garage in as well. If they had had to do parking, I would have questioned whether they would have been able to pull
that. They wouldn't have made the economics would not have worked.
Dory, was that ratio just within the green area, just within that area where the
yes
is it
okay?
It didn't include the Albertsons.
No, it just was that lot.
Commissioner?
The other thing that I did today was in talking to people about this, I understood that there's no one else that has an ordinance anywhere that includes FAR in their using their parking garage. Maybe, Tom, you know that. And it's not that I don't think that Winter Park's not special and all that. I think we are. But that is definitely a departure from the way it is written anywhere else. From what I understand.
On that point, can I ask a quick question?
Oh,
does that in this was this included in 2009? Prior to 2009, did that restriction, did that inclusion of the parking in the FAR?
I'm looking at Jeff because I wasn't here. So,
except in the Central Business District, they were excluded. SunTrust, Park Place, but outside they were included.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. It is unusual to see parking garages be included in the FAR. Just in the jurisdictions that I'm familiar with and the research I've done, it is unusual. It doesn't mean it can't happen. If it's the desire of Winter Park to allow them, then that would be unique to our code, and that's fine.
Right. Anything else up here?
No, sir.
Do we have a motion on the table?
I don't.
This is the first one. I'll move it. The only one we got right now. I'll move it forward.
I will second that. Open up the floor to public comment. Anyone wishing to speak on this matter, please step forward.
Hi, my name is Marquita Hollingsworth. I live at 646 West Comstock Avenue. I'm in Winter Park. And I grew up in this community. I actually grew up on English Court, been a resident of Winter Park for 26 years. And I graduated from Winter Park High School in 2001, left, went to college, got my master's and bachelor's in architecture, came back here in 2007. And I now own a house on Comstock Avenue and started my own family last year. So like you said, Winter Park is unique because it has a nice character to it, and that's also the reason why I came back. And you also mentioned the other planned developments, Baldwin Park Celebration. And they're successful and they look nice, but they also have that artificial feel, where Winter Park has that unique character of the trees and the brick roads and everything that's going with it. So it's just kind of a shame to me that I'm noticing there's a lot of changes happening on the west side of Winter Park. A lot of developments, and there's nothing wrong with development and revitalization, but the scale of these projects are just getting extremely too large. And it's a shame that these different businesses and residents have to come out and basically fight and defend why they want to keep the character of Winter Park the way that it is. And I'm learning as I'm going through this process and coming to these meetings and trying to get more involved and see what exactly is going on in the community. So at the last public and zoning meeting, it was recommended that the community got together and met. So we did have the community got together. The west side of Winter Park community got together last week and we met. There were 51 residents there that met. 34 were homeowners, 4 property owners, 4 renters, and others did not specify. But basically, I'm one of the 3 residents that were appointed to kind of represent those that attended the meeting for Winter Park. And basically, we oppose these changes. And also to touch on that garage, I think also the context in which the scale of these buildings, and I'm using the same picture that you just saw. I don't know if it's going to show on my iPad.
It's pretty good.
So it's the same image that you showed, but basically I think this should also be seen as context. Like I said, I grew up on English Court, and you see there, and that building's not even completed. There's another story going on top of it, and on top of that, the building hasn't finished off. This is the view from my parents' house. So now, when you think about the residents that live there, these garages have been kind of plopped throughout the city, and now they're being developed around it. So now you're kind of going into these communities, and the residents are being affected. That is now the view of those that live on that street. And like I said, the scale of it going from single residence, just the scale of it is just too large. So I just hope you oppose that change.
Thank you.
My name is Marty Sullivan. I live at 901 Georgia Avenue. I'm a fifth generation Floridian, and Winter Park has been my home for the last 32 years. And I've seen changes, some I like, some I don't. But Winter Park has a blueprint on what to do with this city, developed in 2009. It's the comprehensive plan. And I want to read from it, policy 1-1.1.2, maintaining village character. And keep in mind, are we doing this? The city shall strive to maintain the overall low-density village character of Winter Park, consistent with the future land use map. When exercising the authority of the conditional approval process and the variance process, the village character shall be preserved. Towards this end, the city shall exercise strict application of the policies of this comprehensive plan and the implementing land use codes for site development, and shall authorize variances only when such exceptions are compatible with adjacent properties and are required by unusual circumstances. It goes on to say the desire is to achieve a beautiful, pleasant, principally village-scale, pedestrian-oriented community. This proposal violates this principle of our use plan. And I don't know who is being served by this, but it's not me, and I don't believe it's the citizens of Winter Park. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan.
If y'all would like to come up closer if you're going to speak, feel free to sit in the front or stand up against the wall. It'd be great. Thank you.
I'm Maura Smith Sullivan, Mr. Sullivan's wife, and 901 Georgia Avenue, same address, et cetera. Lived here 32 years. I walk every morning with neighbors, and gosh, know a lot of people in the city. And to a person, they really seem panicked by the scale of development. They don't see how what the development so far, a lot of it, how it improves their village concept. I'm also,
Mary, you're going for some drama here.
Michelle,
can you hold that for a second? Go ahead, Ms. Sullivan. Thank you.
Did that make it more dramatic? Good.
Thank you.
I'm also here today on behalf of some neighbors, Ruth Stokes at the Cloisters, apartment 413, Winter Park 32789, Deborah Galbraith, 1142 Washington Avenue, unit 17A, and who authorized me to make some remarks on their behalf. Deborah's lived here for over 20 years, has not seen anything close to what our current group on the commission has done in contravention to the spirit of the city's comprehensive plan. So, anyway, those are the comments, and we would like more input. It's always at heart to read the agenda on these meetings and to know what's coming up. But thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sullivan.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi. My name is John Bolden. I was born and raised in Winter Park. I'm actually 63 years old. When I say born, I was born on Capon Avenue, address 541 North Capon. As Mrs. Hollingsworth said at the beginning, the West Side community of Winter Park, Hannibal Square, whatever you, however you reference it, has three representatives that they've asked us to speak on their behalf as to what they want. And I think it's only fitting that we let you, that I say to you, in the last few weeks, the community came before the Planning and Zoning Committee and had a petition signed by in excess of 100 people in the community to slow down some of these things. We were instructed by the Planning and Zoning Committee to get together and come up with a plan or a compromise plan, for which we did, and we had, that's the 52, 51 numbers she talked about. And they elected the three of us to speak on their behalf. What that says for is what we are concerned right now, and I think this is going to lead into more and more and more, is simply the high density aspect of what the garage will allow people to do to continue to force people out of our community. While the garage right now, you say, well, future garages, well, unfortunately, we have the garages already there. The garage you just saw on your overhead. But the garage you see on the corners of Swope and Dennings, there's a garage there that really, really does impact immediately where we're going today. Bottom line, as you can tell from where we are, we too are concerned about the character of Winter Park. We're certainly concerned about the character of the west side of Winter Park. We have had some negative impact in the past as to how the character has been influenced for the sake of development. We are strongly appeal to you not to proceed with this at this point. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Good evening. Mary Daniels, 650 Canton Avenue. I'm not one of the appointed ones. I'm a resident. And I've lived here for quite some time. I've served on the Planning and Zoning Committee Board. Speaking of parking garages, we have four parking garages in that community already. And if you count the one where Panera Bread is, it's five, because the CRA has been extended to Interlochen. When is enough enough? And it appears that there might be a preference to parking garage than open space parking. But I don't know about you guys. I have a phobia with parking garage. I hate parking in a parking garage. There is no air conditioning, and you're on third, fourth, fifth floor, and you park your car, and you might get mugged, and you might not, but it's always there, because there is no one there. There's no security or anything. So when you're parking in these parking garages, you are at your own risk of getting where you need to get. Same thing could happen in a parking lot. I beg your pardon on that. But on a parking lot, you do have the air. You have a space, and you have green space, because you have dictated that they've got to have so much green space. What's happening in that community, and if you approve this, it doesn't just affect what you're talking commercial. And what you really need to do is plan. It should have been planned residential development, because if we keep piecemealing the comprehensive plan every time a developer comes with a plan, which could be a great plan, but you're piecemealing and amending the comprehensive plan to provide for that developer to develop what they are proposing. And this is, I just cannot rationalize with that. And we continue to piecemeal and change the comprehensive plan to help the developer. What about the community? What about the residents? What about involving them? And a lot of people, when you read these articles and the different things that's changing, the average person haven't a clue what you're talking about. And you talk about changing, your language. And then you even go on to say, on this one, you're going to delete the parameters for the creation and establishment of plan development and zoning district, and then other policy texts relating. What other policy texts? We don't know. Do you guys know? So I think you're treading real, real dangerous waters here. And I think you need to consider, step back, get the community involved. They also need to know. You bring in specials, people to come in here and give you, to go over and recommend these things to you. What about the people, your taxpayers that are here? When are they going to be involved other than like I am standing here now and with limited information of what you're talking about? And we hope that you oppose C, D, and E.
Thank you, Ms. Daniel.
Hi, my name is Mary Randall. I live at 1000 South Kentucky Avenue, and I have spoken many times before the commission. I know you're probably all tired of hearing from me, but in past meetings I have said over and over, you are densifying our areas and you are not taking the whole into consideration. So we now have developments going up on Denning and 1792 that are bringing incredible amounts of traffic, and they're not even finished yet. When is it going to stop? I agree 100% with what Mary Daniel said. This used to be a community of homes. It is turning into a community of large commercial ventures and large apartment complexes, and increasing the density of a town that was never designed to be what you're making it. And I think, I know I speak for many people when I say, we do not want this in Winter Park. When are you going to hear this? When are you going to get the message? It's taking forever to drive any place already. I go to work in the morning up a Loma, and the traffic coming into Winter Park will be blocked from Lakemont Avenue all the way down to the library. People are waiting for 3 and 4 traffic lights to change. And it may not even be our traffic. It may be the traffic coming from Oviedo. It may be traffic coming from a lot of other places. But it is traffic, and we're just adding more to it by adding to the density of our town. I don't want to live in a town like this. And I've heard many people say that recently. We don't want to live in a town where we have to fight our way to get to everything. One of the joys of living in Winter Park used to be that we could be every place we needed to be within 5 or 10 minutes. It's not fun to drive in Winter Park anymore. But I don't want to focus on the FARs and parking garages. I want to focus on density, because that's what the real issue is. What you're bringing to Winter Park and what you're doing to us in terms of density. And I have said it over and over again, and I don't know whether anybody ever listens to anything that the citizens of Winter Park say, although we are the taxpayers, and I would hope you would at least remember that. We are the taxpayers. And I don't care if my taxes go up $100 a year. I'd rather have that than have the density that we're moving towards. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ryan.
Donna Collado, 327 Beloit. I think the very first question is, who will benefit from these proposed changes? Is it national development companies that have deep pockets and have so much influence we're willing to give up all kinds of changes to accommodate them? Is it a chosen few local property owners who are holding tight until more favorable rules can be applied to their properties? Is it local institutions that are acquiring more and more property and have this planned development model as part of their expansion plans? Is it the city of Winter Park, who has swapped a piece of property abutting the railroad tracks in which development, an increased fire and a non-counted parking structure would make it much more desirable for redevelopment? What will the residents reap from these changes? Living in the Northwest Quadrant, I will witness at close range the effects of these changes. Currently, Denning has 300 new housing units built or being constructed, a new office building at the corner of Morris and Denning, a proposal to cut through Lee Road to Denning, and the potential for a 2,500 to a 3,500 seat minor league baseball stadium at Martin Luther King Park. What currently sits at the corner of Webster and Denning? The Votech School, a site ripe for redevelopment, especially if this proposed density and intensity is allowed that will exempt a parking structure. For sure, the residents will reap the gridlock on Denning, as well as all north-south streets east of Park Avenue. If you live in a walled subdivision, which mitigates cut-through traffic, or east of Park Avenue, this absolute glut of redevelopment will have little impact on your life. But once Denning becomes our next commercial quarter and New York Avenue has a minimum of two buses meeting each of the 59 commuter rail trains, that leaves Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania becomes a narrow, two-lane brick road in the Hannibal Square area and feeds into the most convoluted intersection in town. Unfortunately, for people in the Northwest Quadrant, it will be out of necessity via our main north and south route. I just returned from a trip to Savannah, and prior to my trip, I read Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil and found a quote that jumped off the page. A genteel southern lady is explaining Savannah to the author, and she says, and I quote, "People come here from all over the country and fall in love with Savannah. Then they move here, and pretty soon they're telling us how much more lively and prosperous Savannah would be if we only knew what we had and how to take advantage of it." I call these people Gucci carpetbaggers. Well, I'm out of time, but my conclusion is it may be only the Gucci carpetbaggers that will benefit from this proposal.
Thank you, Ms.
Sally Flynn, 1400 Highland Road again. First off, I don't know what happens to me when I hear people talking about Baldwin Park and play. We are not Baldwin Park. We are Winter Park. We are different, and we want to stay different. I don't want to plan development here like Baldwin Park. I was saddened and distraught when I heard about these changes that might be coming forth in the comp plan. I don't know whether it's coming forth from people who have just moved in here and think that maybe it would be better to change everything. I've been here 55 years. I don't want to have Winter Park changed into a metropolis. For years, I have been trying to do what I could. And Commissioner Leary, it would be nice if you paid attention.
I am paying attention. Thank you.
For years now, I've been trying to do what I could to help maintain the uniqueness and the ambience of Winter Park. The density east of 1792 has happened with such speed that one cannot even realize what is taking place, but the traffic and the congestion is getting terrible. What we don't need are more comp plan changes that give developers more density. Speaking at the podium is like speaking to a wall. One feels like deals have been made and nothing can change the result. So today I have with me a white flag. This is for surrender. If any of these proposals are passed, I will put this white flag in front of my house and I hope others will follow. This is showing that this town no longer belongs to the residents, but is in the hand of the developers and those who think money is more precious than Winter Park.
Anyone else?
Good afternoon. I'm Patrick Chapin. I'm the president and CEO of the Winter Park Chamber of Commerce. I'm not here to make an endorsement one way or the other on this very, very complex issue. I do have a couple statements, but I thought it was important to point out that all this concern about development that we see along Denning, that's happened well before this. So that was under the current comp plan. Love it or hate it, this doesn't impact that. I think that the Chamber hasn't taken a look at this real closely yet, because it is so complex, first pass, of course, we look to experts like the WRT study and also the planning and zoning, which was 6-0, and of course staff. I mean, at some point you have to rely on the experts in the field. But because there's so much passion by the community and certainly by some of the commission, we would be happy to hold community conversations. We would be happy to vet this if you felt like it needed more conversation. We're not here to endorse it at this point, but I think a community visioning is a little bit too far, but certainly there's a lot of emotion here, and we don't want to add to that. So my recommendation would be to table it.
Hi, Pete Weldon, 700 Via Lombardi. I come here tonight as a citizen, not as a member of the Planning and Zoning Board, which I am. I just thought I'd try to explain one Planning and Zoning Board member's view on this issue, and it has to do with separating fear and risk. I heard a lot of fear up here in the last half hour, and I understand it. I'm afraid of a lot of things myself, but this isn't one of them. First, to the West Side concerns, those concerns were specific to a proposal coming before P&Z next month and for discussion tomorrow at noon, and do not relate to this plan development proposal that's currently in front of us. Secondly, with regard to all of the concern about the current redevelopment, I have nothing to do with it. I'm not a developer. I'm a resident. I've lived here all my for the past 25 years, raised my kids here. Every one of those buildings that concern you today were built under our current comprehensive plan. With the exception of a variance that was made for the four-story apartment complex on Denning, where the land was aggregated because it was the same owner. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but with regard to all those three things, I think we should refer to Commissioner Cooper's reference that if the city denies someone the right to build something under our current comprehensive plan, the city is open to a lawsuit. Is that a fair conclusion? Thank you. So we have to put the reality of what exists today and what was done today within that factual context before we get all excited. Now, moving towards this thing, the plan development proposal. The fear, again, is understandable. One of the things that struck me in considering this personally as a member of P&Z was the extent to which we were allowing residential density. And I was satisfied that sticking with our current comprehensive plan, residential density of 25 units per acre max, where it's zoned R4, was a reasonable constraint on residential density. I don't want to see any more large-scale apartment complexes going up in Winter Park either. To the extent that we have not attracted any considered, thoughtful, responsible plan developments on any properties in the past 6 or 7 years speaks to the weakness of our current policy. As also pointed out, the plan development proposals here tonight rely on the current height maps, and that's critical. You're shaking your head. They rely on the current height maps. If you go look at those maps, and you look at the densities, and you look at the size of the properties, and you look at the green space requirements, you'll find that what can be built is not astronomical, has plenty of green space. The other risk factor that needs to be addressed here, presuming this plan development change goes through, is that underneath it will be a land development code to be written that will require and have available to it some constraints on the plan development with regard to green space that will further constrain the capacity of these properties should anyone come to town and ask to be considered for it, because it is not going to be an entitlement. It is going to be an opportunity for someone to make a request. I believe that the current proposal is wise, reasonable, and will prove to be of benefit to the city, and that includes all the residents. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.
My name is Lurleen Fletcher. Once again, I'm here. And I just missed the mayor for being in here. I didn't see that he had disappeared, didn't come or whatever, because he should be here to listen to us too. I've been in Winter Park for over 60-some years. I, too, raised my children, my grandchildren, and my great-grandchildren is coming up along. And when we was coming here to the meetings, we also stated that we didn't want apartments, condos, a high-rise building. They also told us that there was going to be limit to single-family homes would be limit and single-family resident. And I kind of assumed that Swope was a resident. I know it had probably a R3 spot here and spot there. But in to come and look at Swope and Denning's for the senior family houses with the apartment up, the building up over my house three times, and they can look down over in it from off the top of their building if they wanted to, because I'm 811 English Court. Sorry about that. My name is Lurleen Fletcher. I'm at 811 English Court. I, too, live on the same street she just showed, Denning's, where they're building whatever. I don't know what they is, because I haven't heard about what they was going to be. And plus, it's a two-story building came up on my street, and I didn't know nothing about it. We resident don't get no information of what's coming up over on the west side of Winter Park and they resident. And it would be so friendly if we can get some information, whenever somebody coming in to build something in the resident in the west side of Winter Park. And it's kind of hard for you to get up here and speak for the 10 and 20 minutes when you have so much that you need to let you know that what we don't approve of and what we don't want. And especially these high-rising buildings coming up, you won't be able to breathe after a while because they be not surrounding us. These parking garages, I mean, where do you see these many parking garages jump up in the neighborhood? You don't see them on your side of town, do you? And you wouldn't allow anybody to put such stuff in front of your house, around your house. So it is time for you all to start listening at the neighbors from the west side trying to explain their expression and their feeling. They want to live on the west side. They don't want to be pushed out.
Thank you, Ms.
I'm going to be there until the day I die. And I'm going to be here to watch y'all fly away. So goodbye.
Thank you, Mrs. Fletcher. Is there anyone else that would like to speak? Seeing none, I'll close the floor to public comment. We have one more.
My name is Linda Erickson. I live at 535 North Interlochen. And I hate getting up in front of groups and speaking, but I was born and raised here in 1949. I'm almost 65. I moved away for 35 years and came back 6 years ago. And I have seen tremendous change in this town. Some of it good, like someone said, and some of it not so good. I have two really good friends that were from here that have left and said, I am so over Winter Park. And that broke my heart. I'm like, what are you talking about? And they said, just wait. You know, just wait till you're here for a few years and you're going to see. It's not like it used to be. And I think there's so many good things that happened, but I am so against all this, the apartments, the huge parking lots, although parking has become a tremendous problem. I spent probably 20 minutes driving around because I just live off Park Avenue, so usually I walk everywhere. But I had to go to the farmer's market and take my car the other day, and I couldn't find a parking place anywhere. I mean, anywhere. I was not happy. And finally, I found one in the you know, waited around until someone pulled out of the train station area. But it's just, my husband, a lot of times we come home somewhere at night, he goes, you want to drive down Park Avenue? And I've gotten to the point where I say, no. And he goes, why? And I said, you always want to drive down Park Avenue. I said, it's not fun anymore. It's so crowded with people and crazy people trying to parallel park. No one even knows how to parallel park anymore. That's another one. They're doing U-turns in the middle of Park Avenue. I'm like, what is going on here? There are crazy people living here now or visiting. I don't know. But, I mean, I agree with everyone that the community needs to take. They need to feel more part of these decisions. And I don't want us to become anywhere USA. I really want us to stay a village. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Going once. Anyone? No? Okay. I'll close the floor to public comment. I think I just want to clarify for the record that a lot of the conversation that has been going on over the past half hour or so, while engaging, and it's important for the community, it's important to have these conversations, much of it has nothing to do with, or little to do with, what we're here to discuss today. When we talk, we're not talking about approving parking garages or not approving parking garages. We're talking about parking garages being included in the FAR or not in the FAR. Parking garages will still be being built. In regards to all the development that's happening on Denning, as Mr. Weldon made point, those were approved under the current comprehensive plan. So that is, that is not something that is going to be affected by this motion at all that's right in front of us today. In regards to those things, too, if you think back, we had a state office building, we had a DMV site. That included a ton of parking. Denning Avenue was constructed to handle additional traffic on there. It's a four-lane road. So there's a lot of stuff that, again, as we talked about, it's important to have these discussions. But in regards to this, whether this moves forward or not is not going to allow parking garages or not allow parking garages. It's just simply going to, it discusses exactly what can be counted towards the FAR of the development. And I think we, as a commission, need to get back to what's in front of us and the motion that's in front of us. So any more commentary from the commission? Commissioner McMacken?
None for me, sir.
Commissioner Cooper?
No, thank you.
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Great.
Let's call this to a vote then. We have before us a motion to approve as it stands.
I'd like to make an amendment, please.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Three amendments. The first amendment would be to remove continue to include parking garages in the calculation of floor area ratio in plan developments.
So tell us what you would do here.
Would it be safe to say that you would like to remove the
deletion
point number three, which is removing the parking garage FAR from the FAR calculations?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Steve, thank you very much for help with that. I'm having iPad.
I'll look for a second on that. That amendment fails for lack of a second.
The second amendment I would like to make is to currently the PD1 residential density is 17 density units per acre. I would like to request that we continue to limit PD residential development to 17 density units per acre.
That motion fails for lack of a second.
Currently, plan development twos are prohibited any place to the east of the 1792 corridor. I would like to request that the inner core that is defined by this exclusion.
In number two.
Right now it says Pennsylvania Avenue is the western border. I would like to make an amendment that the western border be changed to Denning Avenue.
Wait, Denning's in here.
The western border. The western border right now is of the area. The inner core is defined as Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania to Interlaken. I would like to request that be Denning to Interlaken. Currently, it's 1792.
That motion fails for lack of a second.
Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Commissioner. We have before us the original motion. And again, folks, these are recommended from the original study. Shall we please call the roll?
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
No.
Commissioner McMathie?
No.
Vice Mayor Leary?
No.
Folks, you guys looking for a 15-minute break or so?
It'd be a good time to have one.
Yes.
That's on the,
great, let's reconvene at 6:15. That'd be great. Thank you. Thank you all. Okay, let's pick up where we left off, and we are on, if I can remember where we left off, 11D. Larry.
Nope.
Larry's not here.
He was just here.
Yes. There you go.
He's right out in the hallway.
I'd read it, but I don't have a great voice.
That's right. This is Larry Brown.
This is 17.
I'm pretty sure he gets his exercise coming back in here and climbing the stairs.
Larry, don't run too fast. Am I full of muscle?
He was giving opinions on the hallway.
Free work. Great. Larry, we're on 11D, if you could read that ordinance.
Yes, yes, sir.
Thank you, sir.
An ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, Article 1 Comprehensive Plan, amending the goals, objectives, and policies and text within the future land use element related to the maximum building height within the Central Business District future land use designation, providing severability, codification, conflicts, and an effective date.
Thank you. Dory, your handle on this?
Yes. We have a conflict between the comprehensive plan and the zoning code with regard to the building heights within the Central Business District. This conflict allows the comprehensive plan establishes a 30-foot and a 40-foot building height in the CBD, depending on where you're located. The zoning code allows you to have to grant a variance procedure up to a variance of 5 feet to that. What staff is recommending at this point is to be consistent with the land development code and allow a variance process to take place. And you don't have a variance process in the comprehensive planning process. There is no such animal. It doesn't exist. Is to take out the feet requirement and just put a height restriction and make sure that the heights are clear of either two-story or three-story, and then allow your land development code to have your feet and detail in it at that. And it's it really, this is as simple as that when it comes to a cleanup item in the comprehensive plan.
Great.
Question for Dory. If we do that, then the out of the comp, not in the comp plan, but in our other code, where we go up two stories, and then for the third story, we have a 1-to-1 setback for every height, for every foot above a certain height.
It's still there.
It's still there, and it would still apply for the variances. So
correct.
If we did grant a 5-foot variance, that additional setback, and it's a technical one. Would it be for the whole third floor, or only the 5% variance that setback would be, additional setback would be required for. Are you following me?
Good question.
Yeah, because we can go up to 30 and still have the setback. And if we get a 5-foot variance, is that 5-foot variance then just the 5-foot variance required to be back?
Realistically, any applicant then is going to come and also ask for an exception that the setback just be for the third floor, which may be starting at 32 feet instead of 30 feet because of the...
A little into the weeds, but just wanted to make...
Right.
Okay.
As far as the amendment goes, what we're asking for is rather than have it be 30 feet, 35 feet, 40 feet, or 45 feet, we'd like to leave it at two-story and three-story and then allow that discussion to happen where you have a site plan in front of you and can actually see and make those decisions with regard to variances.
Thank you. That's sure.
When I was reviewing this to prepare for the meeting tonight, I noted that policy 13.8.9 has a supermajority provision, and that's not being struck out.
It is in the next amendment cycle.
Okay, so in the next.
We actually have it as the next ordinance. Yes, it's there.
Thank you.
I'd like to move it.
I'll second that. Any further commission discussion? Commissioner Cooper?
I just have a question. How long has the 40-foot height been in the comp plan?
2009.
That didn't happen with the SunTrust building?
No.
Thank you.
Any else? Anyone like to speak on this matter? I'm going to open up the floor for public discussion. Seeing none, I'll close the floor. Any more discussion up here? You guys good?
Copy me, sir.
Great. Michelle, will you call the roll, please?
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. Larry, 11E.
An ordinance of the City of Winter Park, Florida, Article 1, Comprehensive Plan, amending goals, objectives, and policies text within the future land use element related to repealing the requirement for a supermajority vote of the City Commission to approve certain conditional uses, providing for severability, codification, and conflicts, providing an effective date.
Dory.
Yes, this is really in keeping with proposed changes that Attorney Brown has made in the past with regard to the charter. And we're recommending that we remove the supermajority requirements of the comprehensive plan that are addressed in three different policies, and that would remove the supermajority with regard to the matter at hand, in keeping with where the City Commission has gone in the past.
Thank you, Dory. And just to explain to those out there, there have been conflicts between the supermajority and the charter, which is the ultimate ruling document of the City of Winter Park, so we are trying to clean that up with the supermajority, which, if we did not, could lead to some problems down the road. That is the purpose behind this. Commission discussion?
One quick question.
Sure.
If for any reason citizens would want to change that charter, that is an election
issue that
could be put on a ballot and
in
say
fact,
that.
It was presented and a number of charter amendments were approved, but the supermajority requirement did not pass.
But it could
I think that had to be 09 or
yes,
it was back some time ago. I thought we went through this.
Oh, not 09. I think it was 2099 or something, right?
No.
I think it was 09 or 10. It was 09.
Okay.
But that is the vehicle should this
correct referendum.
Correct.
Would be referendum that would state that. So we are merely cleaning house between two things that we need to do. That was my understanding. So
yes.
Okay. If I could just briefly add, your charter is your constitution, and your ordinances are inferior to your constitution, and your charter section 2.11A provides that a majority vote of quorum present is all that is required to pass an ordinance. So when you put in supermajority requirements, it's contrary to the charter provision that tells the public how ordinances are adopted.
Said much more elegantly than I said,
Larry. I do have
school is paying off.
That's why I sit next to him.
I'd like to move it.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Question. Sure. Commissioner McMahon, Commissioner Cooper?
Larry, I have a question about we're talking about construction within the stream floodways and the floodplains of the City of Winter Park. Obviously, I would think most of us would concur it's our policy that we not do that. So how do you implement a policy? Is there another policy, Jeff, in the comprehensive plan that already addresses these environmental issues?
Yes, but this one actually dictates the voting.
Right, it puts some teeth in it.
But the other aspirational things about what we're trying to accomplish are in other policies.
Right. You have multiple places in your development code that deal with environmental issues.
But do we have a policy as a city? Because it's very important. I mean, we're talking about the whole Lake Virginia floodplains. We're talking about the Genius property. We're talking about a lot of things along waterways.
And state and federal law, of course, are superior to even your charter, your comp plan. So nothing that you do could ever violate the South Florida. We're in the St. John's Water Management District. I was dealing with something in Broward County the other, so I was down with Swift Mud, but you're subject to St. John's Water Management District regulations, Florida DEP regulations, and so there are just many layers that would prohibit the kind of
thing. Do we have policies?
I would have to go back and read specifically to
we do. Okay.
Jeff is saying you do.
Thank you.
Is there any further commission discussion? Now, I'm going to open the floor for public comment. Anyone wishing to speak on this matter, please feel free to come forward.
Me
Mary Daniels, 650 Kent Avenue. I think I'm up here more for clarification than, because reading this request until you all were actually discussing it, I didn't take out of this. This had anything to do with lakes or anything. So, you know, what we see, and we weren't here to hear it, you have no clue that this is what that meant. So, because what I had taken out of this was that, you know, requirement for a supermajority vote of the city commission to approve certain conditions. Yes. I'm thinking any condition.
You are right.
You are right.
I'm thinking any condition, and that, you know,
and
you could.
One of those conditions was dealing with lakes and
yeah, but
waterway.
The average person, okay, no, and reading this, would not know that. And I was prepared to oppose because I'm thinking, you know, if you're going to amend something as important as the comprehensive plan, wouldn't you want a supermajority? Would you not?
Some of us would, but our charter does not allow us to do that.
Right, the charter, your charter
says. That's why
says
I'm coming for clarification.
2.11A requires an ordinance to be passed. It shall, it's, the word is, a proposed ordinance shall be adopted when it has received the affirmative vote of a majority of the city commission physically present.
Okay, what was that, 2.1?
Ms. Daniels, basically the charter says that you don't need a supermajority on anything, so anything that's subordinate to that that requires a supermajority is in conflict with the charter. So we have to remove that language, or if it conflicts, mm-hmm. we have to get that out of all the other code. Does that make sense?
It makes sense now, but like, okay. You know, that's why I said I need to clarify. I don't know about the rest of the people sitting here, but I definitely need clarification on it.
And we've been talking about it, Mary, so we knew this had happened, and so it's not news to us because we knew that had happened, and so that's why we probably didn't give it as much time as you needed. But we just simply can't have conflicting rules.
Anything conflict with the charter.
Okay.
Anyone else? Close the floor to public comment. You all ready to vote? Great. Michelle?
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
No.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Leary?
Yes. Thank you. 11E. This is the ordinance governing the garbage collection. Larry?
Yes. F. It's actually 11F, and it's that's all right, and it's a very long title, so bear with me. An ordinance of the who I don't know who wrote this one.
City attorney.
An ordinance of the city of Winter Park, Florida, amending Chapter 82 of the Code of Ordinances, creating a definition of Center Street corridor, amending the definitions of commercial container, refuse can, refuse cart. Amending Section 82-2, Schedule of Civil Penalties, amending Section 82-3 and 82-6 regarding enforcement of violations, repealing Sections 82-4 and 82-5, amending Section 82-32, Preparation of Refuse, amending Section 82-33, Directing Placement of Commercial Containers, amending Section 82-35, Refuse Carts, amending Section 82-36, Points of Collection, amending Section 82-37, Frequency of Collection, amending Section 82-40, Providing a Remedy for Nonpayment of Fees, replacing Director of Public Works with City Manager or his designee, providing for severability, codification conflicts, and an effective date.
Thank you, Larry. That hurt.
I was going to say, wow, that was daunting. What we're dealing with is we have an outdated solid waste code, and we're working on that in a more comprehensive manner. But one of our tasks for the year is to focus on quality, and one of the areas that we're focusing on as we work on these specific areas is the Park Avenue and Center Street area. And this is an ordinance to allow consolidation of garbage in the Center Street area, which means we'll go from having multiple front load cans. Is everybody familiar with what the front load can looks like? It's the bigger can. We'll go from having multiple front load cans and a couple of compactors on Center Street to having one compactor per block, and then the city will be enclosing that compactor in a fenced enclosure, and it'll be shared and picked up on a regular basis, just depending on what that block's service requires. So in a block that has many restaurants, it would be 6 days a week service. In a block that is potentially mainly retail, it could be as low as three. But in the beginning, we'll start with 6 days service for each block and monitor the amount of garbage that's being removed. This is an effort to clean up Center Street, make more space back there, potentially improve the loading zones, and possibly add a parking space or two. And it's also going to allow us to resurface and fix some of the roadways where we've got, I'm going to do this wrong, Troy, but we have like divots and places in the road that hold water. So we're looking to clean all that up as part of our overall project. And you've seen many of the improvements already coming into play that are also included in this, which would be like the public-private partnership between Center Street and Welburn. We've increased the washings on Park Avenue for the sidewalks. We've created the merchant parking program. We've revamped the holiday lighting. And we've also got a parks employee now walking Park Avenue twice per day, checking the garbage cans. So we've got a lot going on in the area to try and improve the overall appearance and cleanliness. And we've taken this to the Park Avenue Merchants Association. They seemed supportive at the time. We've currently sent a letter out to everybody on Park Avenue, and the letter documented both the current cost of garbage and the estimated cost of garbage so that we could make sure that if they were going to experience a change, they would know what that change was in advance, and potentially they could work with us if the cost weren't quite right. Each business has a factor placed on it based on the density of the garbage anticipated in your business. So, you know, we've developed that spreadsheet, but clearly there will be some tweaks that need to occur along the way where we may have a misunderstanding of what goes on in the business. We may think that they do a more dense type service than they're providing. So,
when are we looking to implement this, Michelle?
After the next reading, if this is successful, we'll order the containers. They're pretty expensive. Waste Pro orders them. And so they don't want to order until an approval is made. It'll take 30 to 45 days to get the containers, and then we would install them.
And they are the property of Waste Pro? City does not purchase
them? Right.
Will the city be taking any property to create these locations?
We'll look to do it in city right-of-way or in conjunction with approval of a property owner. So there's at least one situation where we've gotten some approval from the property owner to align the dumpster better.
Okay. The other question I had for you, it's not really a question, it's an observation. I mean, it's almost a good problem to have. We're seeing so much success. We're so busy on Park Avenue that these dumpsters are filling up. So I think it's a nice, elegant solution than what we have out there now. Commissioner,
We affectionately call those holes Troy's traps.
Troy's traps.
Troy's traps. Yes, but it's a. We're gonna screen these.
Yes.
I'm assuming, and I heard the word fence, which kind of I'm a little. Hopefully, have something a little more substantial than that, because knowing how these guys bang around in these areas, having done this for a lot of other commercial folks, that stuff disappears and gets knocked down real quick. So, other than that, I mean, I'm with Commissioner Leary in the context that, yes, this is long overdue, and anything we do to clean up that back alley is a good thing. So,
I'd like to move. Oh, sorry. It's very positive. That's been an eyesore for a long time, those overflowing dumpsters.
I want to manage expectations a little bit. This doesn't fix the problem if a person leaves a restaurant with a bag full of bottles and it busts open on the way to the garbage can and they just walk back inside.
No, I understand.
Which is one of the challenges we have back there today, and so we're trying to, as Michelle said, we're trying to really introduce some pride not only amongst our employees but amongst the participants along Park Avenue, so that they all take Center Street as an important. I mean, it's always going to be an alley. You know, we're not changing the fact that it's a service alley to those businesses, but we're trying to get buy-in amongst everybody to take pride and make this a better place for all of us, because we do have residents that live along the
street,
as well as restaurants and everything else. So,
and we all cut through and down yes, center.
And we get their pictures of what it looks like back there. Yes, we do.
I do have one question. Are you working with the individual business owners or just the Park Avenue Merchants Association?
We've sent a letter to everybody who pays a utility bill. So if you're currently paying the garbage service, you've gotten a letter, and the copy of the letter was in your packet explaining what was happening, and it gives a comparison of the price, and it asks them to reach out and talk to us.
Okay.
So, if they are seeing a price increase, I'm sure we won't get too many complaints of those who are seeing the decrease, but if they are seeing an increase, we can work with them, review the type of garbage that's coming out of their business, and potentially mitigate some of the cost increase.
That sounds very fair. The big difference in a restaurant and a...
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I'd just like to move it.
For a second?
Second.
Mr. Cooper? Further discussion up here? Open up the floor for public comment. Anyone wishing to speak on this matter?
Hi, I'm Lane Brady Macheski with Casina 214. I'm one of the owners and the business manager there. It's at 151 East Welburn. We are on the corner of Welburn and Center Street, so we know all about these dumpsters. We've been asking, I'm the troublemaker, I know. I've been asking to do something about it for almost 3 years. We have our 3-year anniversary now. So thank you for looking at this and taking it seriously, because I see it as a fire code issue. So Chief White, that Center Street is very narrow, and although the driver at Waste Pro really diligently tries to get them in the right place, when UPS does deliveries to certain places, those compactors get moved around right now. And there have been many a times where I'm like, a fire truck couldn't get through here. God forbid there is a fire or something, and you can't get through there. So it's very narrow, and again, I see it every day because I park my car back there, and I get blocked in half the time. But also, I've sent in some of those pictures. Last year with the torrential rain, we had one of the dumpsters floating down Welburn. It was actually floating down the street. Thank God it didn't hit a car and it didn't hit somebody. We had some employees come out there and move it back, and it kept moving because it was Beyond Park's dumpster and they didn't have any trash in it. So we finally got it moved to where it wouldn't keep going down Welburn. The other concern that most people don't see, but we see often because it's right in the view of our bar, is on the, not on our side, but Panulo's and Luma's dumpsters. A lot of times they leave the lid open, and when the lid is open, it's right in the walkway on that sidewalk, and people have hit their head because they're talking to their friend and they're not thinking that they're going to run into the lid of a dumpster. So the other thing that I think is really nice about this is we can't mandate our neighbors' collection, how many times that they get it collected during the week. So this will be helpful because everyone will be on the same schedule. So we support that. What else? I think that's it. We're in support of this. If I can't be at the next meeting, I'm in support of it then too. So I don't know if we can do that on the record, but thank you.
Thank you, Lambert.
Good evening. I'm David Onahowski with the Edith Bush Charitable Foundation, and we're located at 199 East Welburn. We've noticed the quality improvements in and around downtown. I want to thank the city for that. Lambrini's been a great cheerleader for a lot of those improvements, and we're supporting the ordinance, but I hope that the city staff, and we'll be getting with them, we haven't been able to talk with them, I hope they'll take a look at each individual property owner. Our garbage collection is built into our building. It's housed behind wrought iron grates with a very decorative vinyl facing so that you don't even know it's there. The garbage truck doesn't go down Treatway. It actually comes into our parking lot, so it's wear and tear on our parking lot, and so we're not part of the problem, but we like to be part of the solution. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Anyone else? Seeing none, we'll close the floor to public comment. Any more discussion up here? Michelle, would you read the roll, please?
Commissioner Sprinkle?
Yes.
Commissioner Cooper?
Yes.
Commissioner McMackin?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Leary?
Yes.
This move on to commission reports. Commissioner Sprinkle.
I just have a request. We have a lot coming up for the next few weeks or the next 2 months, whatever we want to call it. And we have some dates that are work sessions and different things. I'd like it if somebody would just give me a summary to make sure. I had to make sure that I wasn't supposed to be here at 2 o'clock today instead of 3:30. And I know that sounds silly, but no. It seems like we have a lot of different times. If you would just do a summary of that for me, okay. For you.
I was going to ask, and not only for us, but also that could be posted somewhere, just so that everybody knows that, it's going to be a busy couple months.
It is, and
one meeting and
right.
A little bit. So.
And a lot of the things that people are asking for, we're asking for too. So I want to see and show that those things are going to be happening. The other thing is that we've heard loud and clear, and we've heard it for a long time. We even got some volunteer help today from Patrick about, if we want to do something that's a more of a public meeting. We have that coming up tomorrow night, and so that's great to have an opportunity because we've got these letters that give us all kinds of information that aren't the same information we have. So much is out there that's just a result of the wrong information getting in people's hands. So I want us to continue to try to get the information out that what we know is as accurate as we can make it, whether it's on the website or however we do that. I want that to be one of our efforts that we move towards is how we can do a better job of getting this information. We've heard it from a number of people. Mary mentioned it. A number of people did today that they are not always clear on what we're saying and what we're doing. And, we have the opportunity to call Randy and find out, but everybody doesn't. They could, I guess, Randy, but no. So just as we move forward, I would like us to do address that at some point in ways that we can make that happen and easier for public.
Thank you. Mr. Cooper.
No, don't have a thing tonight. Thank you.
Commissioner McMacken.
Just one quick one. Was fortunate to be at the paint out on Saturday evening, and it was truly inspiring in a lot of ways to see how artists from all over the country come in and spend a week and create paintings that represent their interpretation of our city. Mm-hmm. And it was all great stuff. It was a great fundraiser for the museum and whatnot, but that is really a unique look at. And I do believe that they catalog all of those online, so if anybody really wants to get a look-see, even the ones that have been sold prior to the evening are out there. It's really a fascinating look at our city and
the
really
takeaways.
And how other people view it. It was fantastic. And the Cape and House is really looking good.
Yeah.
Peeked over the fence and through the blinds and everything else, and it's coming together quite nicely.
Good.
That's all I had, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, staff, and thank you, fellow commissioners, for helping me get through this one with the mayor.
Hey, man.
But thank you. I appreciate it.
Well done.
Matt Mitchell, we'll call this meeting closed.
We're done.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
Thank you.